Okay, good morning, everybody. We're going to get started. We're waiting for one member, but I'm sure he'll be here any minute. Welcome to the June 27th Planning Board meeting, beginning of the summer. We'll start with City Attorney directives and swearing in the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. Today's meeting of the Planning Board will be conducted in a hybrid format with members of the board physically present in the commission chambers at Miami Beach City Hall and staff, applicants, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. To participate virtually, members of the public may dial 1-877-853-5257 and enter the webinar ID, which is 861-4342-6327#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 861-4342-6327. Anyone wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon in the Zoom app or dial *9 if they're participating by phone. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you are appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And lastly, I'd like to swear in any members of the public or staff who will be testifying today. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, I typically take discussion items last, but we're going to do one up front because I believe there's people here to speak on that, and it's the Good Time Hotel discussion.
Approval of minutes?
Oh, yeah, let's approve minutes first. Sorry about that. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the May 2023 meeting?
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay. Done. All right. Mickey?
Good morning. Here we are again. Good morning, everybody. Mickey Marrero of law firm Burkhardt Del Fernandez, Larkin & Tappanis, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. You've all been here, some of you more than others, but you've all seen the Good Time and its evolution. The last few things that occurred, we had closed things out, and then there was a concern that was raised, very valid, from one particular neighbor who reached out to you all with some outstanding concerns. Since then, as you can imagine, Avi and his team, Avi's here, and Rob Garcia from the hotel, met with her and continue their constant dialogue with the community. And the letter was sent to you all a few weeks ago, maybe almost a month ago, where we confirmed that we had resolved concerns with that neighbor. That's Chris Reynaga, and she's here today, and she's going to speak to you as well. So we believe that we continue to be responsive, not always perfect, but going in the right direction, and we feel that there's probably not a need for another discussion item on this, but it was requested by the board, so we're here. Avi and Rob are here. Chris is here as well. Happy to discuss it, but as far as having another full-blown debate, I don't believe it's necessary. It's up to you all, but I think we've been able to bring the community together. We continue to have almost, is it bi-weekly when you're meeting with the community? Or regular meetings with the community. As you know, we had the support of several of the associations already. We've been able to make, let me get a meeting of the minds with Ms. Reynaga, and she's here today. So with that, I'll pass it over. I don't know if Avi wants to say any words, but Chris is here, and she'd like to speak to you all as well.
Okay.
Good morning, distinguished members of the board. Great to see you again. Obviously not thrilled to be back as part of a discussion item. No. It's always great to see your faces, but obviously under different circumstances. Truthfully, I mean, I think that we have an amazing relationship with the community. I don't really know why we're back here. Of course, maybe just to verify that we're on the right track. We've gotten no noise violations, very minimal noise complaints since February 22nd. And I think that we've been amazing stewards of the community. I mean, Chris is here. She can testify and not on Good Times' behalf, but how she really feels about the relationship and how we've been doing. So I really don't have much to add other than that we are doing exactly what we said we're going to do, and we're being great stewards of the community, and we're going to continue to do so. So that's all I really have today.
Okay.
Thank you. Chris?
Avi, don't you have a new addition to your family?
I'm so sorry, Tanya?
Do you have a new addition to your family?
I do. I have a 10-week-old baby, Eitan Ariel Yesevich.
Congrats.
God bless him. Thank you so much. Yeah. Chris?
Good to see you. If you could just introduce yourself and your address.
Yes, Chris Reynaga, 730 Pennsylvania Avenue,
okay.
Miami Beach, number 702. So, yes, Avi is correct. I did write the email in frustration, and I'm going to say initially more toward code enforcement. I find that it's been extremely difficult to get anything. It's just very complicated in order to get anything pushed through or navigate, really. And here we are 2 years later. And yes, we do have, I prefer to work with them. I find that it's been easier for me to have open communication. And if it were anyone besides Avi and Rob, it would be a different story. That being said, yes, we can agree to move forward, to work together, to find some type of common ground. That I will agree to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else in chambers to speak on this? Is there anybody on Zoom?
Is there anybody from code?
We have two hands raised. Mark Antoine.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My name is Marc Antoine Damido Gallis. I am the president of the HOA located 635 Euclid Avenue, and I'm unit 109. Thank you for giving me the floor for a second. Good morning, Avi. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, Chris. Avi, you said why you are here today. I think what I can say for my community is that we've been testing and we've been talking with Avi and Robert, and I've been sitting with them at every single meeting they had so far to be able to find common ground indeed and to at least have a good communication. And that has been very good indeed, and I'm glad we have the communication. Yet what we need to find is how acceptable the sound can be for the community. So far, we've been testing elevated sound levels on Saturdays and Sundays since probably April, end of April. This has been raised slightly. That's the feeling we have, and I have some feedback from the community, and I've given that feedback during our meeting, Avi, last week or 2 weeks ago now, I can't remember. I have feedback that it's a little more than it was before. I don't feel that we have the right situation where we can live with what's going on, and we need to address that. What can you do? You asked during those meetings as well, what can you do for our community? And what needs to be done is that we find common ground, what's acceptable and what we can live with. There have been some code compliance calls back in May from our community. And I've told your noise attendants that are on west of Washington that are on the street. I've told them that Saturday I've had a discussion with members of the community, and that the sound was elevated and was way elevated compared to the elevated level that was 3 weeks ago. So I don't know if you've raised the volume or not during that time of 3 weeks. But it seems to be a little more intrusive than what it was before when we were starting to test that elevated sound. What can we do? That's really a question I have for everyone. What can we do? What do we need to do?
Go ahead, Tanya.
Mark, thank you for your comments. Just so we in the chambers can understand where your building is in location to the Good Time, can you explain where it is?
Sure. So you have the Good Time Hotel on one side of Washington Avenue. You have the Anglers on the other side. And we're right west of the Anglers.
I'm sorry, you're right where?
Next to the Anglers. West of the Anglers Hotel, so we are between.
Are your residents hearing more the higher in the building they are, or is it sort of generally a general concern?
Well, we all have, so the building is divided in say, two blocks. There's an east Euclid facing and a west facing Euclid block and an east Pennsylvania court facing the Anglers and the Sky Motel. These units, my unit is 109, and that's what I'm looking at and facing, have roof terraces. These roof terraces have a lot of noise coming from the good time. During the elevator sound level. We have, these units are the ones that have the most elevated sound and the most sound intrusion from the good time. The one facing Euclid, not that much.
Okay, Mark, we're going to let other speakers speak, and obviously you can listen on the meeting and you'll hear any response from the good time. Thank you. Who's next?
Charles Fisher.
Charles, you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name's Charles Fisher. I've lived in South Beach for about 15 years. I moved to South Beach because I enjoy a party. But since the opening of the Good Time Hotel, and it's not, it'd be one thing if it was just, you know, 4th of July, New Year's Eve, sporadic parties. It's every Thursday, it's almost every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They have a rooftop outdoor club blasting music across the Flamingo Park neighborhood. I can hear it clear from my terrace. I can hear it clearly from the courtyard inside my building. I can hear it clearly all the time. On May 19th, the weekend of May 19th, they had a party. And I can't call code enforcement all the time because I have other stuff to do, but I called, they came. They heard it very clearly. So I've opened up a public records request. Need to figure out why I'm not getting an answer from what the result of that was. The problem is it's just not appropriate for the city to allow an outdoor rooftop club blasting music over the Flamingo Park neighborhood. It should not be allowed. Nothing above ambient noise should be allowed. When this was originally approved, the original approval said no noise west of Washington Avenue. I live west of Washington Avenue, and I hear it loudly every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It makes the outdoor use of my property unusable. Finally, the Angler Hotel has sporadically started throwing their own parties. I think from the impetus of good now that this noise is spreading even more. So I'm concerned that it's becoming a slow pot to boil, and we're just hearing a constant party all the time. I don't know why this is allowed to continue every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to disrupt the use of our private space that we've had use and quiet for years and years and years. So it really needs to be brought back to nothing above ambient noise or nothing of Washington Avenue.
Thank you. Anybody else on Zoom?
We have Johan Moore.
Johan, you have 3 minutes.
Yes, good morning, Planning Board. I think I was not going to comment on this, not wanting to sound like a broken record. I'm very happy that Chris has come to a point of communication with her at times unneighborly neighbors, but the other comments really bring up the question again that either the Planning Board needs to revisit and tighten the noise standard, or in fact that the commission needs to do so. And since we will have a newly seated commission at the end of the year with various candidates, I put that question before one and all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else on
Zoom? No other hands on Zoom.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name's Mitch Novick. I live in the Entertainment District. For a decade, I've appeared before this board for every CUP allowing for open-air entertainment, with exception of the Good Time Hotel, knowing that this application would impact the neighbors. A couple of callers ago stated that noise attracts noise or something to that effect. That is the truth. And if you're looking for blame, look in the mirror. It's this board who's allowed all of these conditional use permits that allow for intrusive entertainment to impact residents, and that's the problem. Noise needs to be contained, and that's it. Thank you.
Hey, Mitch? Sir?
Hi, Scott Needleman with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association, and I wasn't here expecting to speak on this, but you know, this has been sort of an ongoing issue for a long time, and we're all aware of what the issues are. You did hear from Chris, who has been talking with the hotel, and like she said, even with my experience with the operators of the hotel, they are very receptive to the neighbors, and they try, and I know they've spent a lot of money trying to mitigate the noise. But what we heard today as well is there's still some issues. So, you know, I'm not here to say do one thing or do another, you know, or don't do anything, but I think it's important that the dialogue with the neighbors continue. I think it's important that the planning board keep this on its agenda, whether it's next month, 2 months, 3 months. I think it's something that you need to stay on top of. And, you know, it's nobody wants to shut down a hotel or stop something that sort of brings in most of their revenue, from what I understand. But, you know, we have to consider the neighborhood. We have to consider the residents in the neighborhood. And the residents are being affected. So it's, like I said, it's important to just keep an eye on this and see how it goes. And I don't know if you can direct maybe code compliance to be a little bit more diligent in patrolling the area, or when they do get a call for that hotel, to maybe make it a priority. But it's something that, again, I'll just say the city needs to keep on top of. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, again, this is just a discussion item. There's no action being taken today, but, you know, if you ever want to respond, and then I'm sure the board may have some questions for.
Thank you so much for the commentary and feedback. We take it very, very seriously. I want to be very clear. There's some things that were said that were inaccurate about how we're operating the hotel. We do not do parties Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have Friday, Saturday, Sunday events, in which Friday and Sunday are subdued, and there is no noise complaints on those days. And the one day that seems to be conflictive is Saturday, in which we are in full communication whenever we do larger scale events. Saturday is the main day that we can operate. We're in full communication, full transparency with the neighbors on sound those days. And the headliner typically is in the late afternoon. Other than that, again, there's been no noise violations. Please look at the amount of noise complaints that you've had over the past 4 months. It's countable on one hand. And we know that it's going to be tough to satisfy every single resident in the community. We're doing the best that we can. We're going to continue to do exactly what we've been doing. We're going to continue to be transparent, and we're going to continue to operate this hotel in a way that balances the needs of the community with the needs of the business. And that hasn't changed. So I just want to make that very clear. Thank you so much.
Okay. Anybody else in chambers? Okay.
Very briefly, and I just 30 sure. seconds. I just, again, as Avi said, there's a lot of things that are going on, but you all were here at the beginning of this. I think no matter your position, everybody can agree the hotel has come an incredibly long way from where we were getting multiple complaints a day, and it was just, you know, it looked like it could never be solved. There are, you know, like every operator, like every restaurant, like every, you know, there are some, there occasionally there are some complaints. Some people hear things differently than others. The weather impacts things, and we'll continue. There's no doubt that Avi and his team will continue that dialogue. If they reach out to him, he responds, he reacts. He's been incredible to work with. Without him, I don't know who else would have been able to get us to where we are. But we just want to continue doing what we're doing. There's no violations. And we feel that it's come out an incredibly long way. We'll continue to work with the community. I think you've heard even from the folks that had some concerns that they do experience that dialogue, and they're happy with that communication. So thank you.
Okay. Again, board, this is a discussion item. So there's no action being taken, but if anyone has discussion that they want the operators to hear. We'll start with Gail.
I'll have it I admit the planning board has let down the residents. I've been on the planning board a year and a half, and the Good Time Hotel has come before us on the agenda about 12, 13 times. Right there, that's a red flag. It seems to me, it sounds like enforcement is on lays on the shoulders of one person, and that is the manager of the hotel. And, you know, I guess we're glad we have Avi, but Avi might get a promotion or he might get find a better job somewhere else. And then you have to start the relationship all over again. It shouldn't be that we have to rely on a manager of a hotel. We should be able to rely on the conditional use permit that we grant and the zoning laws, and we failed at that. In the past, I have recommended that we remove the entertainment on the roof altogether, but my colleagues didn't agree. And then my next suggestion was to at least dial back the hour. Right now, I think you can have entertainment till 8 p.m. I suggested we dial it back to 5 p.m. so when people come home from work, they don't have to hear that pounding noise. But that didn't pass either. So I try my best, but it's done. You have your cup, and now in order to take it away or to change it, it goes through this whole process that's practically impossible. The only time we ever changed a cup, actually, I don't think we ever have. There was an illegal nightclub that had 84 violations over a two-year period, and I don't even think we changed their cup. They eventually went out of business. So I guess I leave it up to my colleagues to come up with other solutions besides the ones that I've recommended. But like the chair said, we cannot change the cup now. It's unless there are multiple valid noise violations that the residents have to, it's so cumbersome for the residents. And as you know, it's really hard to get a valid noise violation for many reasons. That's the only way to edit the cup. I wish maybe we had suggested it. I just thought of something, that we have a code compliance officer on the premises at all times and that the hotel would pay for that. So I look to my colleagues to maybe come up with another solution because I've run out.
Joe?
Yeah.
Just to clarify, I never said you can't change SCUP, but go ahead.
Congrats to Avi on the new addition of the family. Echo some of the sentiments that were shared by Mark, and essentially that is, I'm glad to see that you are working hand in hand with Chris. I think the entire board has always praised the efforts and outreach to the community. Hope to see that continue. Don't want to get into a situation where we're just playing whack-a-mole, putting out fires. Continue that collaboration with the community. It's a relationship that I think behooves both parties to see work, because I'm not sure if we got in a situation of unintended consequences, anybody would come out a winner in that. So I would just urge that you continue the outreach to the community. Exactly what Chris said, how sometimes better to work with you all than it is with code compliance and things like that. Just extend that same courtesy to other people within the community. And then one other thing, you know, there's also the human element to it. In addition to a great addition, I'm aware the Good Time family had a loss this weekend of somebody I knew very well. Amazing person in the community. So extend courtesies for all from all of us to the family at the Good Time.
Jonathan?
And Mr. Chair, I apologize. I wasn't here for the beginning. Out of my control.
No worries.
But, you know, to Gail's point, first I'll start kind of by echoing what Mr. Magazine said, is that, you know, I've always commended you guys for the great progress that you've done and the outreach that you do. Always. I commend you. I really do. But the issue here, for me at least, is that there's really not a whole lot we can do at this point, because at the last board meeting where the CUP was still open for modification or revocation, the planning board, we changed it from noise that's audible inside the apartment to noise that's unreasonably loud. that's the reason why there's no noise complaints now, is because when a code compliance officer goes to an apartment, even if you can hear it inside somebody's living room with the doors closed, they say, well, you know, good time is allowed to have entertainment. So that's not really unreasonably loud because they have entertainment in their CUP and they're allowed to play that loud music. I don't think that that's the intent of anybody on this planning board that people should have to listen to music in their living room or even a thumping or a vibration in their living room. That being said, that's what we have right now, which is their CUP says unreasonably loud. So, you know, the only way to fix that is to kind of go through the burdensome process, like Gail mentioned. And that's a tough process to go through. I don't envision us going through that, but you know, I just want to encourage you to keep contact with the neighbors I wish things were a little bit different, but I'm glad that you guys are addressing the situation.
Question for me. The change in, I guess, you know, the noise threshold, does that prevent there from being complaints, or that just prevents there from being violations? I mean, people could still call complaining, which would show up on the record, correct?
Absolutely.
So, I guess, have there been any noise complaints?
With code enforcement in the room, they'll let us know.
Ah, you are here.
Good morning. Sylvia Escobar, Administrative Service Manager.
Morning.
For noise complaints, in January we had 2, March we had 3, 1 in April, 2 in May, and none in June.
Yeah, so, okay, verified. But I guess I would, you know, again, echo what everyone is saying. I think the good time has always been the example of how to work with the neighbors. I assume and hope that you all will continue to do so. But us not taking any action or being able to take any action right now doesn't mean that we can't do that in the future, which the good time is very aware of. So I think we still have the ability to change things in the future. Hopefully we will never have to, but just continue to work with the neighbors, and thanks to the neighbors for coming out and kind of clearly showing how that dialogue has worked.
Thanks. I'll be very brief because I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I have anyone who's seen my record on the planning board, it's always a balance between wanting businesses to succeed and quality of life for the residents. I don't believe in shutting it all down because I don't want to punish businesses that do behave. That being said, and I appreciate you coming in and speaking, it's important, and I appreciate the comments we heard on Zoom. So, Avi, there still are issues to be resolved. And, you know, we want you to thrive. Listen, I want businesses. They're all moving to Wynwood. They're all moving to Design District. You know, we want businesses to thrive here. So this isn't to punish you, but again, quality of life for the residents is important. So it's always that delicate balance that it's challenging, Mitch. You know, it's not easy for a planning board to always, you know, make these, you know, black and white decisions because they're not always black and white. So that being said, we want you to succeed, but not at the expense of the residents. So like everyone else has said, please continue the dialogue. You know, let's see how you guys do the next month or so, and you know, if we need to bring it back, we'll bring it back. Tanya.
So I echo a fair amount of what my colleagues have said, but I also have a very different set of questions. Sorry, it's kind of what I do. So just for point of clarification, can Rogelio and Nick, can you explain how the law that underpins the CUP should be interpreted by the code enforcement officer? Because the idea was that people should not have to hear any music in their homes or on their balconies or roof decks or whatever from the Good Time Hotel. And it's not that if it wasn't thumping, drowning out your own music or your own television or your own thoughts in your own home, that would then be a violation. So can you just clarify that so we all are working from the same set of assumptions?
So when the planning board modified the order, I believe it was in February, the standard went to what is the citywide standard for noise, and that is that the noise not be unreasonably loud. So it shouldn't be heard from the inside of someone's property. However...
So it shouldn't be heard from the inside of somebody's property. Not it shouldn't be too loud, or it shouldn't be able to be drowned out. It just shouldn't be heard from the inside of somebody's property.
To me, that's how I would interpret it. But it is unreasonably loud. It is somewhat.
And Nick, from an attorney's point of view, what is your view on that?
The only thing I would add to that is that under our code, there's a presumption that noise is unreasonably loud if after 11 o'clock it's plainly audible from a distance of 100 feet. So the same standard applies here. If a neighbor feels that the noise coming from the Good Time is excessively loud, that is, you know, a basis for a complaint to code, and code can go out and investigate it.
So I think, Sylvia, and you and I haven't met, but, you know, you're here representing code, so you get the hot seat. So I think that's part of the concern here, the issue here. I mean, there are a couple things I want to bring up. This is one of them, and I'm sorry, and I apologize, but I feel like this is a really important issue, and I want to get us all to the best outcome, right? This isn't trying to ding anybody or penalize or reward, but I want this to go away so you guys can have your business, make money, have great parties, and neighbors can, you know, think quietly in their homes or do yoga or put their babies to sleep or just enjoy their peace and quiet in their homes. And that's what we're all trying to get to. So please, I ask for your forbearance on this. So Sylvia, when a code official goes out, a code enforcement officer goes out because somebody says, I can hear the music, that is enough of a violation. If the code officer can go in and or on the balcony or in the living room and hear the music, it doesn't need to be, you know, drowning out something else. But if you can hear it, according to our city attorney sitting on the planning board here, that is a violation.
If the officer witnesses, yes, if the, you know, the person complained, I can hear it, the officer has to go inside the unit. If they go inside the unit, they hear the noise, then yes, it would be a violation.
So, in the event that the officer then says, this is a violation, I can hear it, and they go over to the Good Time or whatever the offending business entity might be, and they are told, well, we can be unreasonably loud. We have a CUP that says unreasonably loud. That's a pressure point because it's not unreasonably loud. It's not like, you know, you're having a mosh pit in somebody's living room. But they can hear it, and therefore that is enough of a violation to trigger an action.
If the officer witnesses the music inside the unit, then they hear the music, then yes, it would be considered a violation.
Okay, because I think, and I don't recall where or when, but sometime in the last few months, it seems like there had been a code violation called, and the officer said, yes, that is loud, and then went over to try and speak to somebody at the Good Time. And I think, Mickey, you might have been on the phone with the person saying our CUP has been revised, and so this is okay. And I apologize, my memory stinks, but that's my recollection of this. And so what we're trying to get to is that the CUP doesn't give carte blanche to play music that's louder than the city standard, which is that you can't hear it in your home. And to that point, as a sort of follow-on, is, Avi, you've said that Saturdays are kind of the sticking point, like the other days of the week seem to be fine, but something happens on Saturdays. And so if there's a repeated pattern of music being louder than intended on Saturdays, and we know that, that's a pretty easy fix. You just don't play the music that loud on Saturdays. Like whatever the levels are on Friday and Sunday, then that should be the same level for Saturday. So, sorry, go ahead.
So I just want to clarify because my name was mentioned. So, yeah, there was one time, I think it was probably in April, end of April. I was actually in Naples or Sarasota, some soccer tournament where I usually am on the weekends, and I got a call from the Good Time, so I figured something's going on. So I picked it up, and what happened, it wasn't that I directed anybody to do anything. What happened was the code officer at the time had the old version. And he said, he just asked me, is it plainly audible or unreasonably loud? And he says, no, the standard was changed. So he said, okay, then I can barely hear it, so it's not a violation. That's the way it should have happened. He just had the old document, and I said, I pulled up my phone. I said, look, date this, and I forwarded him the order. And he said, oh, I didn't have that. All I did was send him the order. And then he said, okay, I can barely hear this, so it's not a violation. That's all that happened.
And that's one of the things that had us excited, because you can barely hear it on the street. And that is a huge victory. I mean, you guys have come miles from where you were. So, you know, it's still – which is why I asked one of the other callers, I think it was Mark, who said that, you know, you hear things more from a certain angle and a little higher up. So – and this is what I said months ago when we talked about it. This is like, you guys are 98 yards, right? And we need the last 2 yards to address the issue of the sound when you're higher up. And I do understand that wind can play a difference, et cetera, but – it feels like we're just not quite there yet. And if there's a thing where we know that Saturdays are consistently a little bit more problematic, then there need to be stronger guardrails put on to whoever's performing on Saturday. I'm sure it's, you know, you guys spend good money to bring in big acts, and I'm sure they come with their entourage, their creativity and egos to match, right? So managing that is, I'm sure, I'm not that much fun. And they don't like to be told no, right? But the deal is you guys get to operate doing what you want to do in, you know, across the street from a dense residential neighborhood on the assumption and on the agreement that we all made here collectively that the sound will be managed. And so Saturdays are historically not being managed. That's an easy fix that can be done by the hotel now. The bigger issue is this issue of, and it may have to be a revisiting of the city noise standards, because to have something that is plainly audible versus unreasonably loud, but trying to accomplish the same thing and the language is different, to me, you know, that seems like that's language that needs to be cleaned up. But this is not the place to effectuate that change, but it is something that we should keep in mind and maybe raise to the commission somehow. But
and we offered, just to that point, and I know we want to move on, but we offered to be part of a pilot program for decibel, because I know that's more of a very objective standard.
I mean, that would be amazing.
And we,
or maybe you even reach out to some of the people that spoke today.
Oh, yeah, Mark, no, I'm sure I was already got their names.
No, I'm saying, and maybe go stand in their unit and play the music and see, you know, what level it is that won't be heard there.
Right. And by saying this, I'm not asking there to you know, to trigger more complaints, right. But I think Mr. Cement's point is a good one, that I could call a complaint right now in the good time. It will be registered. I'm sitting here, right? Yeah. The fact that there's one or two a month compared to 10 a day
point. There's no doubt
it's just a massive change.
No, we know the efforts listen, I don't think anyone disputes your efforts and your outreach, and it's all commended, like everyone said up here. So just continue. But like I said, maybe you go to these units that are hearing this noise and go sit in there and play the music and see.
Yeah.
Yeah, because listen, we don't want you here either. We'd rather you all be happy. We'd rather the residents be happy. You guys make money and we move on. But like Tanya said, we're at the goal line. We just need to cross it.
And you know that Avi's already on it. And I will, just because Code's here, and I think they've done a commendable job, honestly, because it's been very challenging. Right. You know, we put pressure on them. The residents put pressure. And I think they've had to deal with a very confusing standard that was different from everywhere else. So they've had to go through the ringer on this. And you know, I commend their efforts in trying to get it right. It's not always perfect, but we do thank everybody's time, and we'll keep on getting it better and better every time. Thank
you. Do you guys know where the
sure, Avi, come up.
The pilot study is with the decibel meters? Because that was one of the actionable, specific, concrete things that seemed like a really great way to address this issue head on, where I think Chris, you had volunteered to have one in your apartment. Maybe somebody else would volunteer to have another. I think you guys would even proffer to pay for it or defray some of the costs. I mean, to me, that's like a no-brainer. Like, hey, let's see what's going on, and we can adjust accordingly. We'll have data. So do we have any information on where that is?
I think the Land Use Committee, the Land Use and Sustainability Committee, decided not to proceed with the pilot study. There were concerns with how a decibel standard would work in a dense urban environment such as the entertainment district, and so they decided not to proceed with the study at this time.
And so the idea of one person's subjective judgment of what's loud is more reliable than actual.
Just to elaborate further on what Rogelio said is an issue that has we've been discussed for years, which is the problem with the decibel standard is the decibel meter doesn't know where the noise is coming from. And so it'll give you a reading of what the sound level is in any given place at a specific point in time, but that it doesn't tell you it's coming from this establishment or that one. So, in the entertainment district, I don't know that it would.
But this isn't
work.
The entertainment district specifically. This is a little bit different. I don't know. Maybe there's an opportunity to do it proactively, you guys, with your neighborhood residents and neighbors, and say, you know, do it not as a city-sanctioned thing, but as a step to find the source of the issue and mitigate it. I don't know how expensive it is. I don't know if you can rent decibel meters. You know, I have no idea, but maybe that's something worth exploring. I would also say that I do understand this, you know, the calls for service for code compliance have gone from 10 a day to one or two a month. That is a huge, huge win. However, also keep in mind that the way the system is set up is that it falls on residents to supervise activity that they are finding troubling, right? Because you wouldn't know. It's not through anyone's fault, but you wouldn't know necessarily that they can hear something that you don't think they could hear. So when residents make calls and then perceive that no action is being taken to mitigate the issue or not as much action as they might like, they will call less frequently. So while it is a good indicator, it is not necessarily the complete picture, right? So there are people who don't even know that they can call code. There are people who live next door to all sorts of things and have no idea that there is, whether it's sound or anything else, that you can call and say, hey, some neighbor dumped this weird trash that nobody's picking up because it's not in a trash can. What, like, they have no idea. There are all kinds of things, city services that get provided that people don't know about. So it's a little bit of a, it's not a red herring, but it's just incomplete as a barometer. And so we can indeed change your CUP. I mean, there's been conversation here saying that we can't. We can. Nobody is of the mind right now that it's at that point. But I beg you guys to cross the finish yard, or the goal line, to mix my metaphors here. You know, get over the last couple of yards. You're so close. Like, you can just jump over the pile and fix this and have a touchdown. And, you know, like, just do it. Do the sound thing. And what?
Goal,
sorry. Like, you're so close, and nobody, we all love you, and we love the neighbors here, and we don't want to see any of you again on this issue. So I'm begging you to take this on and fix it. And Avi, if they're coming in on Saturdays and saying, I demand that we're up to 11, and you're like, well, I'm sorry, you're not Spinal Tap, we're not doing that, it has to stay at 10. It's got to stay at 10. That was the deal. That's what we all agreed to, the same level, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
All right, Avi, one more
thank
minute,
you so much
and we're going to move on. Go ahead.
No. Thank you so much for all the feedback. Okay. Again, right. Gratefully accept it. Certainly realize the importance of acting upon it. I want to make two crystal clear points. The one is that the individuals that spoke today, the Charles Fisher and Mitch Novak, Johan Moore, all of you are invited to participate in the community roundtables. We do them monthly. Also, just so you're aware, I look up every single noise complaint to try to get the addressee so we can engage with them in dialogue. Haven't received that information, actually, upon the request. I'm not sure, Mickey, if you received it. Every single person that calls a noise complaint, I personally try to reach out and engage them. It's actually been quite difficult to get that information from the city for some reason. And I know it's public record. The second point is that when you were talking about the unreasonably loud standard, and Tanya, you made a conclusion based on that standard that it can't be heard inside. I don't know if that's true or not, nor am I convinced it sounds like there's some confusion about unreasonable down the city, that we need to fix the sound always and do exactly what we said we were going to do. But at the same time, it doesn't seem like there is concrete understanding about what is unreasonably loud. There are multiple sources penetrating people's apartments that might be us, might be a subwoofer from a car, might be anything. And there's just no clear indication, is that unreasonably loud? I honestly don't understand what that means. So just putting it out there, saying if at unreasonable hours you can't hear a whisper of sound from anywhere around good time, is that unreasonable? Maybe that's not unreasonable. Maybe that's very unreasonable. I don't know. I don't have the answer, but I just want to put that out there.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Wait, before we end, Avi, I think you're mistaken. I think it's inappropriate that you reach out to people who make a noise complaint. I think it's highly inappropriate. It's a possibility of intimidation. I would ask that you don't do that. If they want to speak to you, they can walk across the street. They know where you are.
So it's highly contradictory to what I was advised to do.
Yeah.
Just be clear.
Last comment, then we're moving on. Sorry.
So we have the general manager of the Good Time telling us he doesn't know what unreasonably loud means. That's a problem for the residents.
Yep.
So I appreciate what you're saying. I get it. I've heard of you and Mickey have done a good job of explaining that issue over a long period of time. But if the general manager doesn't know what it means, that's a problem, and that needs to be addressed. I think and we're the only people to address that. But I think it's clear now, and I hope that code, you know, I appreciate their directive and their understanding of if you can hear it in an apartment or a home, it's unreasonably loud. And I just hope that that message gets delivered to and received by all the code enforcement officers. So thank you.
Okay, we're going to go on to item number 5, Planning Board File 2305926 Sixth Street Overlay on page 16 of your packages. Thank you all.
Okay, so this item was previously considered by the Planning Board. It's been discussed by the Planning Board. I don't know if you want me to go into detail as to what the overlay does. It's a little bit of detail. Okay. So it applies to the properties between 5th Street and 6th Street. It's intended to provide for an appropriate transition between the high-intensity 5th Street corridor and the low-intensity multifamily area of the Flamingo Park neighborhood. So it puts in place regulations that primarily apply to the northern portions of those properties, specifically. It requires that there be a height limit of 50 feet on the northern two lots of those properties, so it's essentially 100 feet from the 6th Street property line. And then beyond that, properties can go higher. There's currently a height limit of 75 feet for residential and mixed-use development. Fully commercial development does continue to have a 50-foot height limit. The ordinance also provides that outdoor and open-air areas of an alcoholic beverage establishment cease no later than 12 a.m. Alcoholic beverage establishments participating in the outdoor dining concession program not be permitted to have outdoor speakers abutting any public sidewalks. Outdoor bar counters be prohibited within 200 feet of the south side of 6th Street. Within 100 feet of the south side of 6th Street, outdoor restaurants and bar seating shall not exceed 100 seats, and only when associated with an indoor venue. Additionally, outdoor seating shall not be permitted beyond 10 p.m. Shall only be permitted until 10 p.m., and the Planning Board may increase the number of seats to 200 seats as part of a CUP. Within 200 feet of the south side of 6th Street, outdoor restaurants or bar seating located above ground shall not exceed 100 feet, only when associated with an indoor venue. And then the outdoor seating only permitted until 10 p.m., but then it does allow for the Planning Board, pursuant to conditional use permit, to allow for an increase in those number of seats up to 200, and also outdoor restaurant and/or bar seating that is more than 100 feet from the south side of 6th Street, but less than 200 feet from the south side of 6th Street. Sorry, I misspoke there. 100 feet from the south side of 6th Street, but less than 200 feet from the south side of 6th Street. The Planning Board may allow for an increase in the number of seats, but not to exceed 300 seats. Additionally, it provides that outdoor music, whether amplified or non-amplified, and television sets be prohibited within 100 feet of the south side of 6th Street. For properties with frontage on 6th Street, entry and exit doors, as well as access points, with the exception of emergency exits to hotels, apartment hotels, suite hotels, food and beverage establishments serving alcohol, have several regulations, including that entry and exit doors not be permitted on 6th Street, that there be a minimum setback of 20 feet from the south side of 6th Street, so the entrances are on the side streets, so that people aren't exiting right into the residential area. And then the Historic Preservation Board can modify that because this is a historic district, so if there's an existing reason to have that exit where it is, the Historic Preservation Board can modify that. Additionally, the ordinance prohibits The sale, lease, or rental of any motor vehicles. It prohibits hostels. It prohibits convenience stores, smoke shops and vape stores, package stores, and retail sale of alcohol for off-premise consumption. I spoke about the height. It requires a minimum setback of 5 feet along all frontages facing a street in order to improve the clear pedestrian path, though the Historic Preservation Board can waive that for due to a historic building that may have a different existing setback. Additionally, if an alley exists, no curb cuts on the front or side streets shall be permitted, so it's encouraging the access to be through the alley. Those are the types of things that are in this ordinance. From the last time it came to the planning board, the only change that was made is we reworded it so that it fits the resiliency code. Previously, it was drafted for the old code. So we did modify it for the new code. And staff recommends that the planning board transmit the ordinance to the city commission with a favorable recommendation.
Okay, and if I remember, the Flamingo Park neighbor also wanted to have another month of vetting. So
correct. That's why it was continued. Yeah. The Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association was discussing, and I believe one of the property owners also had some concerns that they were discussing with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association.
All right, Rogelio, thank you. Anyone here in the chamber to speak?
I have a handout. Can I pass that out now?
Where's your assistant? Just kidding. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So, Scott Needleman with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association, and as you heard, you heard us last month.
Now remind me, you the president?
I facilitate the meetings.
Okay.
We don't have a board per se.
Got it. Okay.
So thanks for hearing us again today. And last month, we presented the reasons why we think this overlay is important and why it's needed. And obviously the city agrees with us that it is needed. We based it on the Alton Road overlay, which was passed a number of years ago and has been very successful in sort of mitigating some of the effects of the newer developments on Alton Road from the east side of Alton Road, from the residential neighborhood just to the east of those. So what we're trying
to... I'm going to interrupt you 1 second because I want to follow this while you're speaking. So basically in this document you gave us, the right corner is what staff is recommending in our booklets, and on the left is what you all are recommending?
Correct.
So you're comparing the two.
What the board asked us for last time.
Right.
You want a breakdown of what the differences are.
Got it.
Obviously, the ordinance is very comprehensive. We're in agreement with a lot of things with staff in the ordinance, but there are certain things that we're not in agreement on.
So anything here is the disagreement. Everything not here is in agreement.
Correct.
Is that fair? Great. Okay. Sorry. Continue.
Correct. So... again, we based it on Alton Road, the overlay on Alton Road, which has been successful. And we're here to ask you to direct city staff to prepare an ordinance that takes our positions in. That's the bottom line. We're looking for those. And again, we base it on Alton Road, which has been very successful. Some of the use restrictions and the distances are comparable to what's in the Alton Road overlay. I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe the distance between 5th and 6th Street is a lot greater than the distance between Alton and Lenox. I don't have the exact numbers, but we're still using the numbers from the Alton Road overlay. So we've met with some of the members on the board. I want to thank them for meeting with us, and we did take some of their suggestions into consideration and incorporated them into our sheet here and our position. That's what we're asking to do. We're still in negotiations with a property owner. We're not looking to prevent somebody from doing something now that's allowed. We're just trying to, this is something for really moving forward in the future. We just you know, are in trying to anticipate things that may come down the line, sort of aggregation of lots and things like that. But we don't want to prevent things that are in motion now.
That's a good question. Are any of your recommendations, if they were implemented, would it take away a property right that someone currently has? Do you know? In other words,
I don't
at the time
so.
They purchased the property. If you don't know, it's okay. I just because
yeah,
I don't know if that's a
if it's a
zone,
I mean, if you mean by a right, somebody has a right now to maybe have rooftop entertainment, and maybe in the future they won't.
Right.
Maybe so, but that, you know, that's the idea, is to try to limit that. Or it's not to limit it. The whole idea is to push everything towards Fifth Street.
Yeah.
Push it away from Sixth Street toward Fifth.
Okay.
That's the idea. And if you look, everything is entrances to businesses are pushed back. Driveways are not on Sixth Street. They're on the side streets or in the alley. That's the whole idea for uses as well as massing. So we, you know, we're still speaking with the property owners. In other words, there's a hotel approved. We don't want to render that non-conforming. You know, however the legalese would be, we want to make sure that's still allowed. And it's what same thing with the there's a property there that's, I guess, the, and Mickey could speak to this, but there's a property owner that has a prospective tenant that may want to do something with outdoor seating. We don't want to stop them, so we're
right.
trying to figure out exactly how things can be worded.
Okay, before you, Hill has a question for you, and then we'll let Mickey mm-hmm. speak.
So,
and then the rest of the board will ask questions afterwards.
So two questions just to help me understand kind of this. So number one, is there a current project that's up for discussion that this would, I guess, pose an issue to or that you're trying to modify?
No, we're not looking to change any current approved project.
Got it. Okay, and then in kind of, I think the way we left it last meeting was, hey, you guys have your request, the staff has theirs. So did you guys have a chance to kind of come together with staff saying, hey, we agree with this, we don't agree with this? Was there more of a meeting of the minds?
It's something we've been doing over the last maybe year and a half to 2 years. We've come to agreement on a lot. These are the things that are outstanding.
These are the last remaining things.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. And then one more question on this. For the short-term rentals, I mean, is there any – based on what the staff is currently recommending, there would be the ability to have short-term rentals?
Yeah, and we know that we – I guess the law is we
right.
can't – prevent those. The city
right.
can't prevent them. So we're saying a conditional use permit would be required if it's within 200 feet of 6th Street and over 20,000 square feet of...
Unfortunately, we can't do that either under the state. Under state law, we're pretty broadly preempted from adopting any new regulations on short-term rentals. That would include requiring conditional use approval. So that part we could not do. I do want to respond, though, on Mr. Chairman, you asked a question about would this impair any current property rights of property owners. And these changes, like any other amendments to the LDRs, would apply prospectively. So if somebody has a project approval from either this board or the DRB or HPP or has a building permit, they could continue to construct under the current code.
Okay, because you don't want an argument of a taking. That's always my concern. Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
Nick, just a question about the STRs. Are we able to, without being viewed by the state as preempting their preemption of us, are we able to change the definition of what a short-term rental is? Like, can we say short-term rentals are anything... 3 months, you know, up to 3 months, not up to, but 3 months, like make it so short-term rental is more than a day, but make it like...
It's a good question. We've looked at that before, and the part of the preemption says that we cannot regulate the frequency or duration of vacation rental. So we've always said don't touch the definition because we don't want to lose what grandfathering we do have.
Okay.
All right. Really appreciate that. Why don't you sit in the front row and Mickey, because I'm sure the board is going to have questions for you both. Thanks a lot for your presentation. This is really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning again. Hopefully you're not already sick of me. We had a meeting with Scott, Mark, and Johan, and Mitch, and some of the folks from Lingo Park. We want to continue that dialogue. you know, I don't want to get into specific issues. There's still some remaining issues. Our office represents two of the projects. One is a hotel that already has an approval, and there's concerns about what this would do to modifications.
Where is the hotel?
1030 6th Street. It's right off Lenox and 6th.
Okay.
It's the Hohauser Hotel. And it's already gone through one modification. We hope it gets moving soon. And that's one. And then the other one is a restaurant that's not approved yet, but is going through the process, property owned by the Estefans at 555 Jefferson. And Mitch, and I've been working with him on that. So my understanding, and not to belabor the point, I think what Scott, you know, Scott, tell me if I'm wrong, but what they would like staff to do is prepare a version of the ordinance that addresses their side of the column, their right. column. And then you all could, I guess, compare those both versions. They obviously support the other one. Our issues don't really depend on either one, but we're still working through some minor issues. The agreement that we had was, if we have it all resolved by today, great. But I think we're still working through things. It's the summer. You know, Mark's away. We had a Zoom meeting. But I think maybe in July, staff may need more time if you all direct them to draft an alternate ordinance.
That's my question. So we already continued it last month. I don't know, is there urgency on this with the commission, or is there time constraints?
I'm not aware of any urgency with the matter. We don't have any projects before us at this moment. Okay. For development.
So. And I, you know, Scott's here, so he can correct me if I'm wrong. This was a neighborhood-driven ordinance, and I think they're okay. They want to make sure we get it right, too. Nothing that I'm representing is going to change between now and the next month or two.
Have you reviewed their call?
I got it this morning. Okay. I will review it. But I'm sure I'm not saying it's not consistent. We've had very good discussions. Right. I was in touch with Mark.
So Friday, you guys want another month to keep working. Is that what I'm
hearing? And I think a month is probably okay for us. I don't know if you all want staff to take a stab at drafting the ordinance. They're suggesting maybe they need more time.
I don't know what staff's opinion is of his suggestions, but
I think that if the board is interested in any of the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association's proposed amendments, then you can include that in your motion to transmit.
Well, that's the issue. Do you want us to take action on this today, or do you want to give them another month? So if there's no urgency, I'm always for the neighbors and the owners to work things out. But if there's urgency, then we can make recommendations. That's why I want your guidance on that.
What I don't think is going to happen is this comes to the commission, and commission goes line item by line item and saying, okay, where's Flamingo Park? Where staff and decide on each of those. If anything, that would be under our purview, perhaps.
Well, yeah, that's why some point we're gonna have to vote on whether we want to send it favorably, and then a second vote on what recommendations we would make. But if there's no urgency and they can come to more of an agreement, then obviously the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is no urgency. Okay. We want to get it right.
Okay.
If it takes another month, two, that's fine. We are in negotiations, so that's moving forward. Okay. As far as having staff, whether it's revising the ordinance or you passing something saying for them to incorporate our views, however long that takes, we're okay. If they need 3 months to do that, 2 months, we're okay with that.
Right. Yeah, because if you understand how – I'm sure you do understand how it works. At some point, we're not going to decide this. We're going to recommend it to the commission.
Correct.
And the tighter it is and the least things of dispute, then obviously the better for everybody. So if staff is okay with that, what I'd like to do is – and I'm going to give you all a chance to give your thoughts – but is have them giving them another month to discuss and narrow the issues of dispute, and then – see how staff feels about what they come to an agreement with. And if you all feel that that's okay, great. If not, you'll tell us why you disagree, and then we'll have to make a decision.
I would say our July agenda is very packed, so okay. You may want to consider continuing it to September to give them the summer to...
Okay with
to,
you guys?
We're okay with that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's do that. But in the meantime, in light of what you just heard, they're going to continue working. Do any of you have any comments you want them to incorporate?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association are my heroes. They are special. They know the zoning better than, you know, 99% of the residents. They take the initiative, and they work with the developers to come with agreements, and they're very well balanced. So thank you for doing this. I totally agree. Give them till September. And, one thing that really just stood out for me, I wanted to tell staff, this one item that looks like low-hanging fruit to me, prohibit within 200 feet, and staff wants 100 feet. There's no alley there between 5th and 6th Street, but there's like, you know, 200 feet is usually where the alley would be. I'll call it the imaginary alley. I think that's pretty easy to agree with Flamingo Park to prohibit within 200 feet. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any
comments? Yeah, I would just say more so to staff, in the event where there are disagreements, please focus on why.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Chair, elaborate on that. But that's what I'd be most interested in. If we can't come to an agreement, at least explain why that is.
We cannot change the ordinance. We have to provide. It's the ordinance that was referred by the commission, so that's the ordinance we have to proceed with. But we're happy to discuss why.
Well, yeah,
why
that, what we would want is your opinion.
Absolutely.
On, if they come to an agreement, right. Your thoughts
on the
and you'll articulate that in September.
Yes. Okay. If you do come with an agreement, please share whatever agreement you have, and we'll provide our.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, if you could, sort of since you have 2 months now, it'd be great if you could share with staff in advance.
What? It's going to be two paths. We're going to come to an agreement, I assume, with the property owners, but we also want to come to an agreement with the city and try to narrow.
Right. That's why the more ample time you provide your agreement to them, the more time they have to digest it, and then they can advise us in September.
Okay. Can I just one point of clarification? I think you guys had said that there are two properties that you guys were discussing, and one of them would not be affected by any of this because it's already work in progress. That was the hotel. And then the SFN project, the restaurant, I think it was, would potentially be affected by this.
We did a site visit, myself and my colleague, and then after that site visit, regarding the restaurant, we had a Zoom with – I'm not sure if you were there, Scott. I know Mark was there, Mitch was there, Johan was there. There's a lot more common ground with that proposed use than I thought there would be. So we're probably a lot closer than we thought before.
But of the two projects that you're discussing.
The other one is more technical because it's, you know, we want to make sure we're appropriately grandfathered. And there's discrepancy on how to do that. I'm not going to get into it here, but I think we'll get to a solution on both.
Thank you.
Yashil, you have something to say?
Motion to move this item. To continue it to the September meeting.
Second.
Okay. Do we need a roll call, or can we just...
No, you can do a voice vote.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much. September All right, I have a quick 26. Question.
It's September 26th.
Yes. The next meeting. September 26th. Is anybody in chambers here on the improved notice requirements for discussion items? No? Do you see anybody on Zoom for that? I'm just going to... The only reason I'm asking, I know there's people here for the... the Lehrman School, and I want to skip it if there's nobody. Nobody on Zoom for item six?
Nobody's hand
raised. All right, so we're going to skip that.
We have to discuss that.
I know. Let's just go to new applications, Planning Board file 200362, Tatum Waterway Drive, Lehrman School. We'll go with that.
Can I just, before we begin, can I just a quick poll of the board? Next month, as I said, we have a heavy agenda.
Yeah, everyone's
if everyone was okay with the 9 a.m. start time for that?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Because we have to notice it properly, that's why. So tomorrow, next meeting will start at 9 a.m.
Okay,
so. Aurelio.
Let me go to that page. Okay. Can you read the?
Yeah. So this is the Lehrman Community Day School, and it's requesting modification to the previously issued conditional use permit. The applicant is requesting modifications to renovate the school and expand the operations to include the property located at 7720 Deakins Avenue without increasing the student enrollment.
Okay, so this school was originally approved recommendation by the Planning Board, and then ultimately back then CUPs used to be approved by the City Commission in 1982. That CUP was subsequently modified in 1985. In 2020, you may recall an ordinance was presented to the Planning Board. The Planning Board transmitted the ordinance with a favorable recommendation that established an overlay for North Beach schools. That was created as a result of the North Beach National Register Conservation District, which created some regulations which conflicted with the regulations that are needed for schools. So this allowed schools to continue as a conforming use. They gave them the ability to aggregate lots, which a residential use would not be allowed to have. Additional changes in height limits and such, and parking requirements as well. That ordinance was subsequently adopted by the City Commission. In July of 2020, the Design Review Board approved modifications to the Lehrman School, including replacing an existing building, and creating a new gym, modifying the surface parking lots, and providing a driveway. So now they're modifying their conditional use permit as part of this. As part of the modifications that they're doing, they're building a new structure, a new gymnasium structure, with some classrooms on third and fourth floor. They're creating a new parking lot area. They're adding a lot to the site, and they're building a new driveway. So most of the drop-off, which currently occurs on the street, will now be moving to the internal, to the interior of the property in a drop-off lane, which should significantly improve traffic conditions around the site, given that there are a few other schools in the vicinity. And during school drop-off times, it can get a little tough, so this should help significantly. The school's capacity is 548 students. They're not requesting any modifications to that. That remains the same. There's other, you know, there are hours and typical things that apply to a school, would continue to apply. It is an existing conditional use permit. We are modernizing the conditional use permit as it was drafted in 1982. We draft them a little bit differently these days, so we're bringing that up to date. There should be significant improvements with traffic, significant improvement with the facilities, and not a change in the actual number of students that are permitted on the site. So with that, staff recommends that the planning board approve the conditional use permit subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
Thank you, Rogelio. Alfredo?
Good morning. Alfredo Gonzalez for the record with Greenberg Traurig, and my associate Devin Vickers is here with me as
well.
You
have to work for him? My condolences. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the applicant, I have a full presentation. I know we're the whole purpose of the application is adding one lot, so we go through the full presentation, whatever the board chooses, or you want a condensed presentation?
Probably condensed. Yeah.
Okay. So, as Rogelio said, the school has been operating for over 63 years at this location, and the last time they had their modification of their CUP, I was at Beach High, actually, in 1985. So what's triggered the modification today, as Rogelio said, is that as part of the school enhancing and modernizing the school, they're not increasing the classroom size. They wanted more modern classrooms for the students, gymnasium, cafeteria combination, so there's more interior space, enhanced security. All that was part of the overlay, also approved by the DRB. We've already completed, pretty much completed phase one, which is if you driven by the school, you'll see now an 8-foot fence around that's part of the enhanced security. The new driveway, the key feature that the community was getting as a benefit was that today, 100% of all the pickup and drop-off for the last 6 years happens on the street, on the public right-of-way, right across the street from Biscayne Elementary that does 100% of their drop-off as well. So with the modification of the site, 70% of the drop-off pickup was being shifted within the property. So that's why throughout the process it's been deemed a major improvement to the area. We're not asking for increased class size. We're really just asking that one lot on Dickens, 77, you can see it on the top right, it's on the screen, add that lot that's already been demolished. So it was part of phase one, we're ready to move into phase two, which is getting the site work done and prep work for the new building, the FNL vault, and then the last portion would be the new building. We're trying to, obviously the school's still operating, so it's being done in phases. But the first phase was the enhancement by bringing the driveway within the property. And we support staff recommendations. So unless there's any questions, I'm happy to get any more detail on any and answer any questions.
Appreciate it. Let's see if there's anyone else in the chambers to speak. I think you are, no?
I'm the head of school at Lehrman. I don't need to speak unless you have any questions or need me to speak.
Okay. Anyone on Zoom?
Well, I see no hands raised.
Okay. So we'll close the public hearing. Any questions?
Yeah, I just have one question. A resident wrote to me and asked me about the setback. They said it was a small setback. I don't think we have purview over your setbacks, but could you explain what is the setback and why is there a short setback between the sidewalk and the, is there any landscaping between the sidewalk and your property?
There is some landscaping, but that was part of the design review approvals. I'll be honest with you, I don't recall we have asked for any variances onto the setbacks. We reconfigured within the site. There was one of the issues with the overlay, and the reason we needed the overlay, is when the city passed an overlay in North Beach years ago, they added a limiting factor. You could only aggregate two lots together. They didn't take into account the pre-existing school that had eight lots already aggregated, so it was already in violation. And then we were adding that. We wanted to add that one additional lot.
Is there a building up against the sidewalk, I guess? Is there a...
There is a building up against us, the existing building.
It's the existing building. But
which is where the new building's going.
Okay.
We could show you... We could kind of show you on the screen on the
if
presentation.
If you could do it quickly, I just wanted to see.
If you look at... On Dickens and 77, you'll see that the existing building.
Is there an arrow you could show?
I should have my. You see the yellow?
Yeah.
That yellow, that's where the building is, and then the gray goes all the way to the side, the corner.
That's the existing building.
The new building will be in that area, but it's meeting the setbacks. There was an issue with one of the setbacks that faces Dickens, as far as ADA access. But outside that, we were...
So I think the setbacks are supposed to be 20 feet in general, but...
Not
there? Okay.
Not theirs.
Okay, I just wanted to see it and have you explain it. Thank you.
And do any other... I know Gail just disclosed one, but do any other board members have any ex parte communications to disclose? Nope? Okay.
Any other board comments otherwise?
My personal view, we should... be bending over backwards to help enhance and facilitate educational opportunities for children in our community. The changes being made actually seem to be more cohesive with the neighborhood, with the environment. So if there is an antagonistic argument, I'm certainly open to hearing it, but absent that.
I'm not an alumnus, but my wife is. Lehrman Community Day School is truly, truly, truly a great steward of our community. So thank you for that. I'd want to make a motion to approve, okay. Subject to the conditions in the draft order.
I get a second?
I'll second.
Oh, great. Michelle and Tanya.
And just, I live in that neighborhood, I live in that neighborhood, and I know how tricky things get at pickup and drop-off time, and having two great community schools across the street from each other is an asset. So I'm thrilled that you're making it a little easier for students and kids and neighbors. So go get them.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Simmet, second by Ms. Bott. And I'll do a roll call. Ms. Beatty is absent. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Simmet?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Great.
Thank you very much,
Alfredo. Thanks for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go back to item number 6, Planning Board File 230602, Improved Notice Requirements for Discussion Items.
Okay, so this is an ordinance. It was on the agenda last month, but we ran out of time, so we had to defer it to this month. It's a simple ordinance. It basically creates a new notice requirement for when a land use board, so that could be the planning board, design review board, historic preservation board, or board of adjustment, requests a discussion item that applies to a specific property. So, for example, we just had a discussion item on the Good Time Hotel. That would be a discussion item that would be subject to this notice requirement because it applies to a specific property. So what this requires is that at least 10 days prior to the discussion item being heard, specific to a single property, a courtesy mail or email notice shall be sent to the owner of record of such property, and the title of discussion shall be posted to the city's online agenda system. It also has a requirement for specific to multiple properties, the same requirement if it applies to multiple properties of a specific neighborhood. We have that same notice requirement. And then also if it's related to a historic preservation board proceeding, it has that same, if it's for less than 10 properties, it has that same requirement that we also provide a courtesy notice to the property owners that are being affected by this. So it's a simple notice. It's related to discussion items. It's not related to action items that are before the board that we have a separate notice requirement already established. This is specific to discussion items. So with that, the staff recommends that the planning board transmit the proposed ordinance to the city commission with a favorable recommendation.
Rogelio, what happens if it's more than 10 buildings?
If it's more than 10 buildings, it's deemed as just a discussion on a specific neighborhood. It'll be on our agenda if you request a discussion item, but at that point, it's becoming difficult to, and it's a little more difficult to then start emailing and finding every single property owner.
Thank you.
Anybody here in chambers to speak on this? Anybody on Zoom?
No hands raised on Zoom.
Okay. Any comments or someone want to move it?
Motion to approve. Sorry.
Go ahead. Tanya moved to approve it. You want a second?
Second.
Great.
We have a motion by Ms. Bott. The second was by Mr. Cement.
Mr. Cement, yep.
Okay. Roll call. Ms. Beattie is absent. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Okay. It's only 11:30. Okay. Next is Planning Board File Number 8, Planning Board 230597, Allison Roads, Lot Split 6450 Allison Road.
Okay. This is an application requesting a division of land, lot split, to modify the existing property lines of the existing site comprised of two individual lots.
Okay. So this is... This is different than our typical lot split applications. Typically, we have one big lot, and they're making multiple lots. In this case, the lot split application is a result of the property owners wanting to shift the property line 20 feet to the south. One of the property owners sold a little bit of land to the neighbor, so the proposal here is to shift the lot line 20 feet to the south. So currently, there is one lot, 6444 Allison Road, which has an 80-foot width. That will be changing, 15 feet south. That will be changing to a 95-foot wide lot, and then the lot at 20 feet. 6444 Allison Road has 80 feet, and it'll be changing to 100 feet. 6450 Allison Road has 95 feet. That'll be reduced to 75 feet. So they're moving the lot line 20 feet to the south.
And what's the other smallest lot in that neighborhood?
So the smallest lot in that neighborhood is 16,200 square feet.
Okay, so would the resulting split change that?
Both lots, the proposed lot size would be 16,000, the smaller one would be 16,163 square feet. So that would be about 40, what is that?
Just want to make sure it's within the character.
About 45 square feet less than the
So that would now become the smallest lot by 45 feet?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Counselor?
It's my last one, so.
Thomas?
You guys.
You're making money today.
You know.
Go ahead.
We fairly split the time, so it's okay. Good morning again. Mickey Marrero, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. With me today, my colleague Nick Rodriguez. And we have some representatives from Strang Architects, I think, on Zoom, if we need them. We all collectively represent Matt and Lori Sidman, who are building their dream home here in Miami Beach. And I'll try and be as brief as possible. I have a fairly long presentation that Nick worked very hard on. But I want to say that this, and we can get the presentation up, Nick, if you... This is really a lot split that I think Rogelio alluded to. It's really not so much a lot split. It's very different from any other lot split that I've worked on, because all we're doing is actually shifting a property line to make it even more compatible with the neighborhood. If we could have the next slide. So if you can see, right now we have the lots are 80 and 95 feet wide. What I'll get to in a slide, you can stay on there, but what I'll get to in a slide soon, you'll see that the platted lots in this area, it's a mixture of 75 feet and 100-foot frontage. Somehow these lots as existing today were shifted before. I don't know when, I don't know how, we can do some research, but ultimately we're going to go back to the 175 that was originally platted. We're not adding another lot, we're not adding intensity, and what you'll see is the resulting potential development from a massing standpoint is actually less than what could be done today. If we could have the next slide. So these are the properties. They're on Allison Road and Allison Island, 6444 and 6450. Next slide. So what's interesting here is our clients, the Sidman family, they bought 6444 Allison Road first. They got a permit, and that home is, we'll show you in a second, but it's already under construction. It's under permitting. It's being built, and what happened during the process, 6450 became available for sale. One, while the Sidmans are building what they believe is their dream home for their family, one thing that was lacking, they were hoping the property was a little wider. They wanted to do an accessory structure for the pool. It wasn't. They moved forward anyway. All of a sudden, 6450 becomes available, and Mr. Sidman took the opportunity and purchased that lot. Next slide. What's that?
The entire lot.
Yes, he bought that lot. But he doesn't need the whole thing. This is the existing properties versus the underlying lots. You see that there's a pattern here, and we'll show you in a second. All the platted lots are 75 or 100. What we have today is 80 and 95. So what you'll get, you have 80, 95 today. What will happen, although it flips, you'll have 100 and 75. I mean, it's such a nominal difference. Next slide. So here's the shift. It's 20 feet, shifting that property line 20 feet, making 6444 slightly larger, taking it from 80 to 100 feet. That's not going to change the size of that house. That's a house already under construction. And then you'll make 6450, which is going to be a future construction that hopefully Mr. Sidman will be able to sell to someone. They'll actually build a smaller house though than they could today. Next slide. And here's what I was telling you before. That's the plat. The plat, all the lots, and they're interchanging, but they're between 75 and 100 feet in lot width. What we'll end up with, if you all approve this today, is just that. It was shifted to 80 and 95 at some point in the past. We're going to bring it back. Although the lots themselves, which one is 75 and which one is 100 is flipped, the pattern is the same. Next slide. So here's the proposed home that's under construction. That home is already being built. We're not asking for it to be larger. All that the Sidmans would like is that on the top left corner you see a proposed cabana on the pool. There's no room for that today. They always wanted this additional area for breathing room and recreational area. So it gives it gives the property a little bit more openness, which they were looking for. It gives them the opportunity to build the cabana. They're not proposing to build any more structure there or make the house any bigger. So with the house that is being built is the house that the neighborhood will get. Next slide.
And 6444 is the property that is acquiring the excess land.
Right. That's asking for the additional land for that cabana.
So it's not as if – sorry to interject there. Sure. But no, go ahead. So it's not as if the larger lot somehow – acquired plans, they got to build a larger house, and then they're selling off the excess. So the house that's actually acquiring more land was already approved under the smaller lot size.
That's correct.
So if anything, this would now make sure that 6450 builds a smaller house.
Bingo. So next slide, you just for you all to see, this is the home that's being built. With the additional, it meets 50% and 30% today. By expanding the lot, it'll obviously be well within. It meets it on the smaller size. It'll be 42% unit area, 26% lot coverage with the additions and with the cabana added. Next slide. Again, just another perspective of the home. You see from the back, that cabana is really an open kind of ominous cabana is the only thing you're going to be getting there. No issues that I think it would impact any neighbors. And as you'll see, we have the support of the surrounding neighbors as well. Next slide. So this is just a massing study. We don't have Mr. Sidman and his family are going to hopefully sell this lot. Someone will be able to build a home up to code. We had the architects do a massing study as required by the code just to see what a home there would look like, just to give you an idea. So that was done. Again, it would be less than what that lot could build today. Here's a comparison of the home under construction with the proposed massing of a theoretical new home, a couple of different perspectives. And we did an area analysis. Was this our version or this is staff's version?
This is our version.
Our version. Yeah. Staff did their own version. The conclusions are essentially the same. We don't need to belabor that. But as you can see, and this was in your packet, I don't know if you had a chance to review it, but the chair pointed out, we're well within the average. We're right there where all the other properties
are. Yeah, that's all I wanted to make sure, because sometimes these splits and put it out of character.
And I'm going to bring you one of those one day. But this one isn't that. Next slide. Again, we don't have to go through the numbers, but well within all the percentages, all the square footages are just what's there already, and even more close to the neighborhood. These are the letters that are in your package. We have five letters from our immediate and surrounding neighbors supporting the application. They've met with the Sidman family. No objections here. Next slide. And that's
the end of our chief presentation.
Could you go
chief.
Back one slide a minute?
Yeah. Those are the addresses of the homes, and you can see them on the map. That we didn't go everywhere. We just went to the immediately surrounding.
Okay, got it. Go ahead.
Great presentation.
What's that?
Great presentation.
I mean,
we'd take us through everything.
I could have gone a little bit more in detail, but I think this is pretty obvious. So one thing I will add that staff's in favor of, when you have lot splits in your code, and I think rightly so, if you grant the lot split, there is a condition that says you can't get variances as a result of the lot split, and you have to go to DRB. So for this, although one home's already under construction, for the other home, they'll have to go to DRB. Usually, one of the variance provisions that we would ask for them to allow to get one variance, because there's a requirement in the code that when you have a lot split and you don't follow the original exact platted lot line, you get a penalty for lot coverage and unit area. And the reason is most of the times folks are asking for a lot split, they're getting more lots than were originally platted, so there's a little bit of a penalty that people have to live with. Here, that's not the case. We're not getting more than we would have otherwise had. In fact, as Mr. Cement pointed out, it's actually a little bit less on the new lot. So we would ask the opportunity to ask the DRB for that variance to just allow us to have the same unit area and lot coverage that's allowed everywhere else, since we're not creating more units. Staff is in favor of that. We're not asking for any other variances on setbacks or height or anything. Just allow us to have the unit area and lot coverage already permitted in the code, since we're not creating more lots and more intensity. And again, staff's in favor of that. That's the only additional request we have. Everyone's in favor that we've spoken to. We hope that remains the case. Mr. Sidman and Griffin from Max Rang's office are available if you'd like to hear from them. But otherwise, we'd ask for your support for this application.
Okay. Other than the owner, is there anyone on Zoom?
And before we take public comment, do any board members have any ex parte communications to disclose? Nope. Okay.
Anybody on Zoom?
Nobody. No hands raised on Zoom.
Okay. Anybody in chambers to speak on this? All right.
I approve this, but I'm confused. Why do we have to give you permission to go to DRB? I don't think I want to do that. Can't you just go to DRB without our permission?
Let me
yes
clarify.
Or no? Can you go to DRB with
you
this?
Have to go to DRB.
Okay, but you don't need our permission, do you?
No. Every home, new home resulting from a lot split application, which that new one will be, has to go to DRB. Otherwise, it wouldn't have to go to DRB.
Right, so explain to Gail what you're asking.
What we're asking is when you split to more lots, the code says you get penalized on lot coverage and unit area. We're actually creating the same number of lots, but one smaller. So we don't think it's fair to penalize us further. Staff agrees. We're just asking for the ability to request from the DRB, because your conditions otherwise say no variances. We're saying allow us to get that one variance on unit area.
But the DRB would have to approve it.
Yeah, you guys don't have the authority to grant it.
Right.
Just don't prohibit us from asking for it. That's
right. Right.
DRB can still say no.
So automatically we are prohibiting them, and they're asking us
correct,
not to
prohibit to allow them to ask DRB.
Okay, all right.
You want to move it, Gail? I'm sorry, does anybody else have any comment?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to move it?
Okay, I'll move it.
With that request
to have.
Yeah, anyone want a second?
Second.
Great.
Okay, we have a motion by Ms. Durham, second by Mr. Cement. Roll call. Ms. Beattie is absent. Ms. Bott?
Yep.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Thank you all.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you all.
So it's 11:30. It's still early. Our lunch is here. The board want to get their lunch? You want to go another item? Anyone care? All right, we'll go to another item. Okay. We'll go to Planning Board File number 9, Planning Board File 230588, 92471 Street, Black Cat Cigar Lounge.
This application is requesting a conditional use permit for an alcoholic beverage establishment for a cigar hookah bar located in an existing commercial building, the Black Cat Cigar Lounge.
Okay, so... This is an establishment located at 924 71st Street on Normandy Island, in the commercial area across the street from the Normandy Fountain. The applicant is required to get a conditional use permit because all alcoholic beverage establishments that are not restaurants north of 65th Street are considered a conditional use. And so the applicant is proposing a cigar lounge, and the code defines cigar and hookah lounges as an alcoholic beverage establishment where the sale of cigars and hookah is permitted.
Even if alcohol is not being served?
It requires that alcohol be served as part of the definition of a cigar hookah lounge.
Okay, otherwise, so I'm trying to understand. So they have a liquor license.
They can get one after this is approved.
Okay, got it.
They may have one issued by the state, but they can't act on it until this conditional use permit is approved.
Okay.
The requirement for a cigar hookah lounge is that it be an alcoholic beverage establishment, because otherwise it would be considered a tobacco vape dealer, which is a prohibited use in this area. So it has to be part of a cigar hookah lounge as defined in the code. So if the conditional use permit is issued, then they can begin the sale of alcohol and tobacco products for consumption on site. So the proposed establishment will have a total occupancy of 83 persons and 45 seats. Their plans show that that they have a seating area located in the front space of the area, and then the bar is located towards the rear of the commercial space. Their operations plan indicates that they wish to operate indoors until 12 a.m. They mention outdoor seating as part of the only outdoor seating they could have is part of a sidewalk cafe that's regulated separately through the city's sidewalk concession program. They did not mention a starting time in their operations plan. Staff recommends that they not open before 10 a.m. As far as their deliveries and waste collection, the applicant has indicated that loading and waste collection occur between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Staff recommends that the loading not occur after 4 p.m. in order to avoid the evening rush hours. And then for security, they propose having cameras monitoring the facility. It's not a very large facility, so we don't expect too many security issues on the site, but we do have some conditions in the draft order regarding security. So with that, staff recommends that the planning board approve the conditional use permit subject to the conditions in the attached draft order.
Thank you, Rogelio. Sir?
Yes. How are you all doing? I guess I know the majority of you. And Rogelio, I really appreciate all the help you gave me from your office on guiding us in which way to go. So,
just formally introduce yourself and your address, okay, just for the record.
I'm Gus Meneses. I am one of the owners of Black Cat Cigar Lounge, along with my wife and my business partner, Daniel Mattel. I've been a resident of Miami Beach for 30 years. And as you also know, I ran for Miami Beach mayor last election. And here I am opening up another small business in the place that I love. So that's basically it. What we're doing is we're bringing in, I sent a little clip. I don't know if I'm allowed to touch the computer, but.
Sure.
Thank you. Well, I want to make sure I sent in a clip of how the place looks and so on, if you don't mind bringing that up. I think I sent it over with the pictures. It was a little quick PowerPoint video. There we go. And this place, as you could see, we're bringing up a real nice, we'll call it somewhat upscale place, great service, and which actually brings a different kind of vibe to the neighborhood, which we're trying to, you know, bring it up a little bit.
Do you live in North Beach?
I have a place in West Avenue on 800, and actually I just moved to North Bay Village. Just had a baby girl, 4 month old, so.
Congrats.
You know, thank you. Yeah, first one at 51, so it's okay.
When her friends call and say, nice meeting your grandfather, don't be offended.
Well, listen, we already started with the jokes, so it was good. So these are the pictures that we have here. And, of course, we also will be, if you could see, we have all the displays there. Sorry about that. Of all the cigars there, there's also in the front area. As you
just trying
see
to visualize, what was there before?
It was empty for a while.
Yeah.
For about 3 years, it was Paint with a Twist, David Sexton's place, and then before that was Chase Law, and before that was an internet cafe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it now.
And we figured this is what the neighborhood needed, and I guess it does because it's.
So it's going to be a bar and a cigar bar.
Yes, and hookah as well.
Okay.
Correct. And we have a nice indoor. As you could see, we don't crowd. That's why we're only doing 43 seats inside, so people can enjoy themselves, and. You know, I mean, basically, that's it. Between the service, my experience of having multiple restaurants over my lifetime as well, that'll carry over. And I think it's what was really needed for the neighborhood, because I see the progression that we're making is to make the area, clean it up a little bit, bring in a different type of clientele. Not even different, just bring the locals into our downtown, which I know this place will be successful at doing so. So that's our goal on how we're going to.
All right, why don't you stay tuned? And so, is there anyone on Zoom for this?
Oh, no hands are raised.
Really? Anybody in chambers? Wow, okay.
And are there any disclosures on this application?
Yeah, so we're going to close the public hearing, but they may have questions. Any disclosures? Yes.
I spoke to somebody in North Beach, Ariana. She thinks this is a great idea. She gave me many reasons why she supports this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know Gus personally from around the neighborhood. Not going to say whether I voted for him for mayor or not. but I went up and personally visited this when I saw it on the agenda. I actually didn't know Gus was involved with it until I walked in. And, you know, he walked me through it. So it's very different than what I was expecting when I read it on the agenda.
Okay. Any other disclosures? No.
I saw it for the first time on the grub crawl a few weeks ago, North Beach.
Yes.
And I know you had an opening event a couple weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
From all reports, was a smash success.
Oh, so it's art. Wait, I'm confused. It's already open?
Oh, we did. We are doing art for the local artists with success, actually. They're selling their paintings there. And that's another part that we're doing, actually. We'll be entertaining all local artists as well.
Right.
And we did it for the CRA, which was, I think, a good compliment to the area.
I'm just wondering, if they're open now, the CUP is allowing them to do what that they can't do now?
So I'm getting it. They opened with a pop-up permit for as an art gallery.
Yes.
Now, as I understand it, there was
permit.
Yes.
Got it.
There
okay.
was some
now
sale
makes
of,
sense.
Of right. alcohol taking place on the site. So as I understand it, the pop-up permit was pulled by the city because there was some alcohol sales taking place on the site.
Actually,
sorry,
yes.
Can you explain that?
So there was a pop-up permit issued, and I'm being informed that pop-up permit was pulled because there was some alcohol sale occurring on the site.
Because the pop-up permit doesn't allow alcohol.
Correct.
Got it. All right. And now they're seeking to get alcohol and smoke cigars. Okay.
Correct.
Yes, I was not aware of it. Unfortunately, I did not read all the little fine prints. I was excited to be open and showcase the place, you know, which would help. And, yes, I was aware afterwards, and we took the right measures. To make sure.
So how were you selling alcohol if you don't have a license?
I do have a license to sell alcohol in the place, yes.
But not a CUP?
Not in the CUP, yes. Right now it's under the catering, because if you get a pop-up permit, you could do it as under catering.
So you got, okay, so let me just, so that I understand. And let me just preface this.
Sure.
You know, not that I'm a cigar smoker,
mm-hmm.
But I, you know, you're a stone's throw from where I live, and it's a neighborhood that's near and dear to my heart, and, you
yes.
know, we want to see more small businesses succeed there and throughout the city. So this is not about you or your business personally. It's about the process. So
yes.
just so I understand,
right.
you pulled a permit
mm-hmm.
for an art gallery?
A pop-up event, yes, which is all art, correct.
Okay. That you used to be open while you built out your space?
No.
Or your space was already built
space
out?
Space was already done. We had all the fire department approvals, health department approvals, taxes from the state, and so on. So.
Okay, so you had the permits pulled, the BTR for the business, all that stuff. That was
The BTR we are waiting on. We were not able to get a BTR until we get the change
here.
Of occupancy.
Okay,
correct, yes.
Okay, so you had the space built out
mm-hmm.
and a pop-up permit so that you could activate the space.
Correct.
While you're awaiting your CUP.
Yes.
And is that how it's the normal flow of events, just so I'm educated on how this goes?
Typically, that doesn't happen. Most of this is actually the first CUP we get for an alcoholic beverage establishment that's not a neighborhood impact establishment for North Beach. So typically, when we get a CUP for a neighborhood impact establishment, they are not getting a pop-up permit as an art gallery. They don't operate until the CUP is approved generally. So
okay.
this
so
is the first time we're in a situation like this where we have a CUP for this type of an establishment. So there is no precedent, but
and
that's generally not common.
And have you had a situation where somebody pulls a pop-up permit for a venture while they're getting themselves ready to open, if I'm understanding this correctly?
I'm not aware of any having happened, but like I said, this is the first type of...
Yeah, can I just say, in Gus's defense...
Yeah.
I didn't know this until this came to us,
yes.
but there's a special zoning law in North Beach that every single bar has to get a conditional use permit. It's a new law. Usually you don't need a conditional use permit unless you have over 299 occupancy. So maybe he didn't know, you know, he needed from even from one occupancy, you need a conditional use permit. I think that's a great law. I'm really happy that a full-time, you know, long-time resident is doing a small business. I might even be a customer if you have lady cigars. I'll try it, you know. I'm a person, I don't mind cigar smoke for some reason. But I was wondering, what point are you trying to get at?
So I have no issue with the business and it coming. What I'm trying to understand is the process of how you got here. And again, this is not about you or your business. It's
I understand.
Because, you know, we're hearing so much about small businesses trying to open here in Miami Beach, and it's impossible, and it takes years. I know somebody who's been paying rent for 4 years.
Yes.
I know somebody who's part of Michael Schwartz, who's Genuine Hospitality Group,
correct.
Who said, you know, not to put words in his mouth, but given the experience that he's had opening Harry's, he's not likely to open another outpost of one of his restaurants here because it's really complicated. So what I'm trying to understand, since you're before us with this unusual path to us, is this path a symptom of the disease? Like, was this a way that was more easily navigable than what would normally be done of pulling permits and, you know, in what would be a normal process, even understanding that you now needed to get a CUP for, like, understanding all that. Like, that's not the part that's giving me pause here. The parts that are giving me pause is you have a pop-up permit for an art gallery, and we're about to give you blessings on a cigar lounge that is quite beautifully and permanently built out. And that's the part I'm wrestling with. And again, not to not have you succeed, but the process, how we got here, and is this, like, because if that's what's now going to become the way that people open small businesses, we have a bigger problem on our hand.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll just interject quickly. Again, the City Planning and Zoning Department, they helped me a lot. They guided me. They gave me guidance every time because, you know, there was it was a process we had to figure out. So that's not your issue. You're a city and they work harder than they're supposed to work harder because of the way the rules are all set up. And it takes a lot of time on their hands. And they spent some good time with me, which probably would have affected other businesses. But they're very good at what they do, and they're loyal to Miami Beach. The issue is, I'll just take a very quick example. They asked us to make a copy of, burn a CD, all the plans and everything on a CD. I could not find a place to burn a CD. Actually, we got lucky. It was in Walgreens, and they turned it on for us, and they burned a CD for us. So these are things that actually delay the small business owner. And again, you know, financially, knock on wood, I kind of estimated it would take me longer than it was supposed to. But after a certain while, I was like, well, I have to figure out how to get this place open, at least to advertise it. So when I do open, get the change of use, people will flood into the place. And, of course, I read all the fine print, and I figured out that I could do certain things legally, of course, without stepping on anyone's toes. So that's how small business is. We do suffer at times. You know, I mean, 4 years, you know, I don't know. I never heard about that, but on a small scale, besides Mr. Michael Schwartz, a small business owner like me and stuff, you know, you have a certain amount of money that you save. You may have financed some of it as well. And eventually that runs out. So you end up doing a grand opening, grand closing. And this is what we need to protect in the city is the small business people that actually are, you know, they're doing it legitimately. They're working hard. They're trying to get the right permits. They're working with the city. And fortunately for me, I did have a lot of experience over the years of owning restaurants, and I did use that knowledge to look at the little fine print and be able to do this. That's basically it, you know. And, you know, I'm very grateful of that, and I also give a lot to the community, which you could ask everybody up in the CRA. I have no issues fundraising, giving out gifts, being able to help the CRA grow up there. I mean, I'm there. David Sexton will be... Joseph would be able to, Gail, I mean, yourself,
And that's what we do. We actually are very, we're not just here to make money. We're also here to bring up the business in the area and attract more good business, small business people. Right. As Carnitas, you know, across the street.
Yeah, of course.
They work so hard, and they had a little difficult time, too, with their sign. You know, it's taken them over 6, 7, 8 months now.
Yeah.
More. Yeah, actually. And these are issues that we all face up there in all parts of Miami. But it's not just Miami Beach. Go to Miami, and you have even worse issues because there, I don't know what's going on. But at least in Miami Beach, we're a small community, and we could all speak with each other. And that helps.
Okay.
So.
Well, again, it's not. It was not a reflection on you, your business. It was the process.
I understand.
And I think we're all just trying to get to,
sure,
in all of this, trying to make sure the process is as good as it can be. I do have a question about the bar hours, because
yes,
you said that there weren't bar opening hours. So what is the standard? Is 10 a.m. the standard for a bar opening?
They run the gamut. They vary. They usually give us the time they want to start.
Oh, okay.
So it's... We put 10 a.m. not too early, but if anybody wants a breakfast cigar, they can.
Yeah, well, when do you? When do you
they
want?
Can go what, in and
do
get
you have
one.
A preference of hours?
Yeah. Actually, we open at 1 p.m. Just a neighborhood. Yeah, I know. Actually, you're right. They do call me sometimes. You know, leave messages. You know, at 9, and I'm like, well.
Do you
that's
want us to put
happen.
1 p.m. in?
I open at 1 p.m.
You want us to put 1 p.m. in the
yes,
CUP?
Yes, please. Yeah, and then we would close. I mean. Does it have to be in case I change, in case I get busier?
No, that's what I'm asking. You want to leave
okay?
it at 10?
Okay, we'll keep it at 10 then, and that'll be good.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Sure. Jonathan?
Tell me about the yes. outdoor area, because you have outdoor seating?
Yes, yes. Okay. Right under the covered area that we have, the immediate area in front, we have outdoor seating right in front of our facade, we'll call it.
And, he wants to know if that smoke's going to bother the public, right?
Actually, I sit outside. I smoke to see what's going on. We have Bob's next to us, and basically they smell like strawberries and marijuana, so we have no issue with that,
yeah,
because of the vape. And then next door we have the vape shop, and then the sushi place. We have a great Wicatana. We have a great relationship for years.
Are you going to – so you plan on serving alcohol outside?
For the front immediate area, yes,
right.
Correct.
And
if it's allowable, of course. Yeah.
And then, do you also plan on having like big hookahs out front?
Actually, whatever is allowed by the city, we'll follow suit on that. Yes, because I know whatever you guys recommend for us.
Right. And Rogelio, I know there was like a recent, I guess, ordinance or whatever about the hookahs. Mm-hmm. Does that apply here?
So their outdoor area is on public property, so that would be regulated under the sidewalk the sidewalk concession program now.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Sidewalk concession program. I don't believe they allow hookahs out there on those anymore. Are you familiar with the new?
Yeah, I read an article that
you're
they
right.
were banning hookahs in.
Yeah,
right. The beach.
That's what I just want to make sure. So there won't be hookahs out there.
No.
Okay. And then so in the proposed CUP. It mentions the indoor portions may operate from 10 to 12, and so I would apply that to outdoors.
Generally, what we rely on the outdoor concession program to regulate the sidewalk cafe. We generally don't include regulations on the sidewalk cafe permits in the CUP. So they would get the standard citywide hours. Do you know the closing time by any chance in the concession program? I think there's a limit of midnight.
It's either midnight or 2.
Let me double check.
But there's
thought
no,
there
there's
was
no
a law that you can't have outdoor sidewalk unless your indoor is open. And you're
yeah.
saying his indoor is closing at midnight, so the outdoor would have to close.
It would
midnight.
Have to close by midnight.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct. Actually, I was thinking of 2 a.m. because at the beginning we just gave a round number on there. If it's allowable, we would appreciate that very much.
For indoor.
So since your plans all said midnight, that's
yes.
what we included in the draft order.
Okay.
But if you want to bring that up to the board, if the board...
You're talking about for indoor?
Indoor and outdoor would be open until 2 a.m., but it's only for certain nights. It would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, which would be a busier nights. The rest of the week, it's we close at 11 or 12 o'clock.
And Bob's is what, 5 a.m.?
5 a.m. is Bob's, yes.
I have no problem with 2 if there's no disruption to the – I don't know the area well enough to know if there – I mean, Tanya maybe can educate me if there's residents that would be bothered by a 2 a.m. time. I don't.
How wide is your storefront?
Our storefront is 20 –
approximately. Yeah, that's
about
pretty,
26 feet, I think.
And how many chairs can you fit in your outdoor
we're
cafe?
We're only putting 6 outside.
6, okay.
It's more of
I mean,
a – people like to
not,
smoke inside more. because of.
But so Bob's, they're open till 5, but their outdoors is not open till 5. Like I don't think there's a concern of you being open till 2, because it's it's facing a very busy street and it's hopefully wouldn't be super noisy, but I don't think having people out there smoking until 2 a.m. is outdoors is really what we're hoping for.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again?
So like staying open until 2 seems like that would be not a detrimental impact, but staying open or having people outside until 2 a.m., I kind of want to move. We're wrestling with this noise issue citywide, right?
I understand.
And so, and I don't know what Bob's is allowed to do with their outdoor seating. I don't know if they're open, if they're allowed to have patrons out there till 5.
Let me ask
something about your outdoors. Other than just 6 people smoking, is there music? Is there
no music outside? Because it says it on the no music outside.
Just smoking.
No live music. We keep the music inside.
All right. I don't have a problem with the outdoors till 2, but again, I'll have to see what everybody else says.
Bob have outdoor seating on the sidewalk. Oh, they do?
Yes.
Until 5 a.m.?
That's what I don't have an answer to. I don't know if there's a way to get that answer quickly.
Oh, no. Sidewalks are limited till 2 a.m.
Correct.
Citywide.
Oh, okay.
So to tell you the truth, I'm like usually really strict about this. I mean, I kind of would let them have 6 seats outside till 2 a.m.
Yeah, and if it's no music.
And there's no music, there's no speakers outside. I mean, I'm really hesitating to say this, but what do you think, Tanya? I'll go with you.
I let's give it a shot. And I would just urge, that neighborhood. I love that neighborhood, but we have a homeless problem. And, so I just urge that whoever's working at night keeps an eye on what's going on outside. And so if patrons are all inside, let's make sure that the seats aren't being used by people who aren't actual customers. And,
good point.
Right, and normally where it's a problem, if there's no music, it's rowdiness. Like what happened at Pretty Lounge, people would come out, they'd be hammered, and they'd be making noise. So just keep an eye on that. We're going to give you 2, and keep an eye on it.
And I agree with that, and I appreciate that very much. It means a lot to us, as a cigar smoker, we only get rowdy when we're talking politics.
I was going to say, most of our hours are very mellow, and they're very chill crowd. I agree.
I would also just suggest, I saw this on Lincoln Road, and I think I took a picture of it. I haven't done anything with it yet, but somebody who apparently doesn't have permission to have outdoor music for their sidewalk cafe had a boombox set up, with a extension cord coming through the front door. So just don't have us haul you back here because you're doing that.
Well, no, because if you see how we built it out, even the smallest wire makes the place go down a little bit. Yeah, we want to keep it nice, beautiful.
But my point is just don't circumnavigate.
No, that we won't do. Yeah. And we respect that because we don't need any issues with the city.
All right, Gail's going to make a motion.
We do have a condition. No outdoor music and speakers are permitted.
Correct. Yeah.
Great.
That's on there.
Thanks for your presentation, and we wish you the best.
Thank
Gail,
you.
Go ahead.
Appreciate motion that we grant the conditional use permit and extend the hours until 2 a.m. indoor and outdoor.
And I'll second that. And this should be a historic
record. It is historic. That is historic.
By the way, Gail made this motion.
And Tanya seconded it.
What's amazing is I'm not sure I was actually going to vote in favor originally, but then I heard Gail and Tanya. And I was like,
listen to him.
This is great.
Nick?
No, I'm not getting in the way of that discussion.
All right, we have a motion. We have a second.
Okay. Just to clarify, so that would be condition 6A, Roman numeral 2. We're going to change that to 2 a.m. Currently, it's listed as 12 a.m.
Correct.
So with that, we have a motion by Ms. Durham, second by Ms. Bott. And do a roll call. Ms. Beattie is absent. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Thanks. Good luck.
Congratulations.
Thanks
so much. It means a lot.
By the way,
are
you selling cigars there?
Yes, we sell cigars.
So you're selling and smoke. So you can bring your own or buy there.
We have no issues with that.
No cork fee for the bringing a cigar.
No, cork fees we don't do.
What's the cigar sniffer thing called?
But I just do like to say.
A cutter.
Best of luck. Thank you so much.
It's a boy cigar or it's a girl cigar?
It's a girl cigar. Violeta. Yeah.
So congrats.
Yeah, I'm a little lethargic now because, you know, sleeping 2 hours a night at 51 years old doesn't work too well like it used to when you were younger. So,
And I know your attorney will be your biggest client.
Oh, he's great.
He's known to like a good cigar. Yeah, all right. We're going to take a five-minute break. I'm going to let you guys get your lunches.
Thank you
very
much for the building department. They really helped me. Thomas Mooney, Rogelio, Alexander, of course.
Rogelio.
Galeries, thank you. And you guys, you have no idea. They helped me through everything.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck with it.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, five-minute break. Get your lunch, and then we'll start at 12:06. Hey, thanks for the indulgence in our lunch break. We're going to continue with item number 10, Planning Board File 230607, North Beach Use Regulations on Massage Therapy Centers. And it's on page 90 of your booklets.
Okay, so this ordinance affects the North Beach commercial character overlay that was considered by the Planning Board on April of this year. So you may recall that ordinance that regulated several nuisance uses north of 63rd Street. So this is an amendment to that section which is being created. When this was originally considered by the Land Use and Sustainability Committee, they bifurcated the ordinance. So they transmitted they referred the bulk of the ordinance to the Planning Board for consideration, but they maintained the portion related to massage therapy centers because they wanted to work those regulations a little further and refine those a little better. So what this ordinance does, it uses the existing definition we have of massage therapy center. In our code, we currently regulate massage therapy centers in the Ocean Terrace area, and they're regulated by in terms of limit on hours. So we have a limitation that they only operate between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. What this ordinance would do is, A, it would make those hours apply to the entire overlay, so that's the whole city north of 63rd Street would have those limitations on hours for massage therapy centers. And then it provides restrictions on the types of massage therapy centers that would be a permitted use, a little more refinement in terms of that definition. So they would be allowed as part of a state-certified school for obtaining a massage therapy license. They would be allowed in multifamily residential buildings, apartment hotels, suite hotels, or hotels that have at least 50 rooms as an accessory use to that building. They would be allowed as part of a fitness center, gym, and wellness center as an accessory to that primary use. And then as part of a state-licensed medical office and clinic, which would be allowed to offer massage therapy services as part of the medical use. And then additionally, as a conditional use, they would be allowed within the town center, central core districts, within office buildings, if located above the first floor, and then also within multifamily residential buildings, apartment hotels, and suite hotels or hotels that have less than 50 units. So in those two situations, they would be permitted, but they would have to come to the Planning Board to get approval. In other locations, other types of buildings, they would be a prohibited use within North Beach. There have been concerns in the past over some massage therapy centers operating and performing illicit activities, so we want to avoid that, and so we want to make sure that the massage therapy centers that do open are legitimate businesses that benefit the community and are providing a good service for the community. So with that, staff recommends that the Planning Board transmit the proposed ordinance amendment to the City Commission with a favorable recommendation.
Thank you. I don't see anyone in chamber. Anyone on Zoom?
We have no hands raised on Zoom.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing. Any questions?
I thought this was just expanding the area where the hours of operation would be restricted for these venues, which I'm all in favor of. But are you saying, Rogelio, that this also would allow massage in multifamily residential buildings where otherwise it's not allowed? Is that what you're saying?
Today they are allowed in multifamily residential buildings without any restrictions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I guess this is good. All it does is expand the area where the operation is restricted hours. Yeah.
The idea being that a hotel would want to have a spa, a residential building might want to have a spa within its facilities. And ideally, if it's as part of a residential building, the people that live there are going to keep an eye on the use and make sure that it doesn't get out of hand.
But wait, so then why are you telling me this? Are you saying, again, my same question, already in these areas that we are opining on, you're allowed to have massage in a multifamily house. So you're already allowed to have it in a suite hotel, which I think that's a bad idea. This is just an hours thing.
Yeah, it's an hours, and we're becoming more restrictive. We're telling you where you can have them.
Okay,
so
good.
So as part of just, if I just own a commercial strip center or commercial building, I wouldn't be allowed to have a standalone massage parlor.
I wish we wouldn't allow it in suite hotels because there's no on-site supervision at suite hotels. It's like an Airbnb. You punch in a number. I mean, these people can, you know, turn it into like a little brothel with...
We have refined the definition of suite hotels, so they are required to have someone on site that lives on site and that there be on site supervision.
Citywide suite hotels or just?
Yeah, it was a definition that came before the planning board maybe 2 months ago that was then sent to the city commission.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that. Okay, thank you.
All right, any other comments?
I apologize. That was apartment hotels. I apologize. Apartment hotels, not suite hotels. Yeah. But our definition for a hotel does require that there be, I believe that there be staff.
Hotel,
Yeah, followed this discussion closely at land use. Agree with the premise. I'll also fully aware in support of what we're trying to avoid. My only question, and perhaps lack of any feedback otherwise, answers it, but since we are really doing our best to limit this to legitimate spy activities, and let's say there was the Carillion Spa or something like that at a legitimate place of business. Is the 9 o'clock closing time restrictive for them? Is that high-end spa, do they have 9 p.m. treatments? And, you know, we're essentially taking away what is a bona fide good service. If there's not anything to the contrary, I'm fine. I just want to be sure that we're not restricting good business activity.
So I these regulations would not apply to anyone who's already in operation. This would be prospective, so any new massage parlors would have those limitations. It's possible that somebody might have a legitimate reason for offering the service at night, but generally, from what we see, that's not the case.
I mean, at night massage turns into like kind of a sexy massage. I think it's a bad idea.
That's the concern.
All right, anyone want to move it?
I'll move it.
Okay. Tanya moved it. Can I get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion by Ms. Bott, second by Ms. Durham. Roll call. Ms. Beattie's absent. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Okay, the last action item, Planning Board File 230608, Conditional Use Approval for Rooftop Alcoholic Establishments, page 97.
Okay, so this is a fairly simple ordinance. It modifies the definition of a neighborhood impact establishment. Currently, a neighborhood impact establishment includes any rooftop establishment that's outdoor that has outdoor entertainment, or that has open air entertainment. Those would be conditional. Those are considered neighborhood impact establishments that would have to come before the planning board. This modifies that definition so that any alcoholic beverage establishment or restaurant located on the top floor of a building, whether fully enclosed or partially open or open to the sky, that is located within 200 feet of a property containing a residential unit, also be considered a conditional use or a neighborhood impact establishment, so they're a conditional use. And they would have to come before the planning board. So currently the trigger is they're having entertainment on the rooftop or their occupancy exceeds 199 people. Those would have to go to the planning board. This now creates a new threshold where if they're near residential uses, even if they don't have entertainment, they would have to come to the planning board.
Okay, that should be a no-brainer.
So simple ordinance, and staff recommends that the planning board transmit it with a favorable recommendation.
Anyone on Zoom?
We have no hands raised on Zoom.
Okay, close the public hearing. Jonathan?
I guess my question is, so if it's an old CUP and they're asking for a modification, and will they need to add this to their, if they already have a rooftop, you know, bar or whatever that doesn't currently require a CUP, would they then need to get approval for it?
If they have a rooftop bar that they want to expand their so it would become a legally nonconforming use if there's a residence nearby and they wanted to expand per se, but not to 199 people, they would need to come in for a CUP. That's correct.
Okay. I'll make a motion.
Wait, I have some questions because I'm surprised there wasn't more of the Mooney Code printed out here. I didn't understand what zone. Is this citywide, first of all, or is it a specific zone?
So it refines the definition of a neighborhood impact establishment. There are several districts that allow neighborhood impact establishments as a conditional use. CD1, they're not allowed. CD2, CD3, MXC, the town center districts, several others that they say neighborhood impact establishments are a conditional use. And then we have a definition for what a neighborhood impact establishment is. This expands on that definition. The definition is only if you have entertainment, it's over 199 occupancy. If you don't have entertainment, it's over 299 occupancy. And then any outdoor entertainment is an NIE, and any open-air entertainment is an NIE. This adds to that list of what is considered an NIE, a neighborhood impact establishment.
So it's citywide, any zone that allows an NIE.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I think that's good.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great.
Yeah. So does this come with, for the open air aspect, uniform time standards across the board? If they have the open air rooftop,
If that specific district has a limitation on hours for alcohol sales, that applies.
Yeah.
But generally, we don't have in the NIE we don't have a limitation. It's a conditional use, so they come to the planning board, and the planning board sets the hours. However, if they're in an area, let's say, I think Alton Road has a 2 a.m. or sorry, West Avenue has a 2 a.m. limit, for example, that you would not be able to exceed the 2 a.m. limit that's in the code.
Yeah, and given what we've experienced with the Good Time and open air on Lincoln Road and things of that sort, should we be exploring, even if it's not within, if we have top level open air rooftop entertainment, even if it's 300 feet away from a residential area, should that, as a usage in itself, be considered a neighborhood impact establishment?
If there's entertainment, it is a neighborhood impact establishment. This is only for those that don't have entertainment. This is in addition for those that don't have entertainment. So if I want to have a restaurant, I don't care to have entertainment. I just want to have a restaurant. The threshold is 200 feet from a residence because you're not going to get the noise from the music blasting. You're going to get the noise from people talking, people eating. That doesn't carry as far as music, but it can impact those neighbors that are relatively close.
So I understand what Joe's saying, and I'm looking at, you know, the 6th Street overlay that we had earlier this morning. For example, we give conditional use permits. This board, and a lot of times we go right along with what the venue wants, the maximum. But I was wondering, since this is rooftop and we've had so many issues with the eatery rooftop, the Good Time, and others, if there was an appetite to make a second amendment, just like this 6th Street overlay, staff agrees to allow a conditional use permit until 12 a.m. Like, it's capped. Like, the planning board will be capped. We can't go above a certain hour. I don't know how to word it, but...
Well, I think right now, you know, there are different hour limitations for different districts in the city. Each neighborhood is different. And also, the planning board has... That's kind of at the core of your conditional use authority is approving hours of operation.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I think that as part of a separate item, I think that would exceed the scope of the notice for this item.
Yeah.
You could consider that, but this board has the authority.
You're just limiting your own discretion.
Which is fine with me.
Right. Okay.
That's the goal. Because it puts less pressure on us. It gives everyone an even playing field if we cap these things. I guess it's something that I'd like to discuss in the future, but... not bring it up right now, but just keep it in mind. If anybody has an idea, please come forth.
I think it's a good direction to discuss in the future because, at the end of the day, we're trying to limit this from proliferating. But anything that is open air, abutting a residential tower, is going to almost certainly cause stress between residents and the business. And we've seen businesses come in purporting to be one thing, and then when they operate, be something else entirely. And so I agree that the notion of how do we limit this even more and not solely rely on the discretion of whoever might be sitting on the planning board at some future date. You know, right now we're all fairly aligned in our desire to make this the best possible city for residents without putting businesses out of business. Who knows? That could change. So I do think it's a valid concern because we're talking about something that is open air abutting a residential tower. Like, just to me, that sounds like strife in the offing. So I'd
all right. Well, and appreciate that. This code amendment is definitely up your alley, Gail. So
I'll work on it.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion. The only thing I'll say is that, you know, I don't know whether staff has a thought about whether just by defining it as the top floor of a building is enough, you know, because there's buildings that have sort of different tiers. We've heard about some new projects that, you know, the ones on the Collins or off of Collins, where was it? Sweet Liberty is that new kind of complex that might have some different levels. And so I think we should pass this with a favorable recommendation, but it might be something to explore if there are, and you know, we just had that one where the restaurant on off of Lincoln Road, where we put the limitation of where the noise shouldn't be heard. That's not the top floor, but it is sort of open air and could affect residents. So, like I said, I think this is good. Maybe we, in the future, I would want to hold this one up with modifications, but in the future, adding to it. I don't know if staff has a proposal.
Couldn't you just change rooftop to open air?
We can make that recommendation.
Yeah, can't we just make that recommendation here? Because I think that's a brilliant catch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can have these staggered buildings. Well, wow. And it could be only the fifth.
Take it. Yes.
It could be like the fifth floor, and the whole big complex bucks. Goes up to mm-hmm. 10, but fifth is what the problem is. So.
They may have a balcony or something.
Yeah. All right, so why don't you move it with that recommendation?
Do we have to move it and then have a second recommendation? Or?
I think motion. You can move the favorable recommendation, then right. Separately move that the ordinance be clarified, to, you know, so that any
open air
area, rooftop, balcony,
elevated or whatever,
right?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
So move with a favorable recommendation for this.
Okay, second. Okay, Mr. Cement seconded.
Motion by Mr. Frieden, second by Mr. Cement. Roll call. Ms. Beattie's absent. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. Second motion, Jonathan?
Motion to make a recommendation to the commission to broaden the scope of the top floor to include any sort of outdoor or terrace.
I think if you say any open air areas,
above the ground floor.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Cement seconded that.
One moment, please. Above the ground floor. Got it. Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Frieden, second by Mr. Cement. Roll call. Ms. Beattie's absent. Ms. Bott.
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Ms. Durham?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Good catch, Jonathan. Okay, that's all action items. Now we're going to move back to our discussion items. The first one is underutilized parking.
Okay. This was a discussion requested by the board regarding underutilized. It came about as a result of a discussion item, as a result of an ordinance amendment regarding, I believe it was Maquialina's on Alton Road, and a parking reduction for them. And so the planning board requested a discussion item to see if there were other ways that underutilized parking could be used for properties located off-site. So as part of that direction, we drafted some suggested text based on that discussion regarding the shared parking standard. So we looked at the shared parking standard that we currently have in the code. The shared parking standard allows a building that has a garage with multiple uses to reduce their parking requirement such that if there are certain uses that are using the parking in the morning hours primarily, and then you have other uses that use the parking primarily at night, that with that shared parking standard, you can reduce the overall parking requirement of the uses in the building. So the suggestion from the board was for that to be allowed to be used for parking located off-site. So if you have, we use the example of the Baptist Hospital Urgent Care. They have a certain amount of parking, certain amount of uses. We looked at if they were to include a restaurant that is located within 500 feet of the property, how that would look. And so in the case of that building, the garage could accommodate the existing garage with the existing uses, a 48-seat restaurant located off-site. If we were to produce this amendment, that garage could accommodate the amount of parking needed for 48 restaurant seats if the underutilized parking ratio were allowed to be used for off-site restaurants. So that's the gist of the discussion item. We prepared some text in the staff report. Basically, it would be amending the requirements for shared parking, where currently it says two or more uses shall be permitted to share the same required off-street parking spaces in a common parking facility on the same lot. And if this suggestion were used, we would add the text, or off-site pursuant to the requirements of Section 528. 528 describes how far away off-site parking can be located. And then that would continue. If the hours or days of peak parking for the uses are so different that a lower total will provide an adequate number of spaces for all uses served by the facility, according to the following table, and then I've included the table as well. So it's a discussion item, so we have no recommendation on.
But what could we do from here? Is it something that we would say, hey, let's get this as an agenda item in order to actually change?
If you wanted this to change, what the process would be is you could make a recommendation to the city commission that they refer an ordinance with this modification. It's something that this board has done before, and amendments have resulted from those recommendations. And so typically what will happen is we will draft a letter to commission indicating the planning board's recommendation, and perhaps that would one of
but
the
can we do that from here, or we would have to have this as like a potential, meaning from this discussion item we could say, hey, we'd like to send this to the commission?
Yes, absolutely.
And when you say that, you're just talking in this narrow defined area that was the original planning board discussion for Maculina, right?
Right. Well, it, Maculina's ordinance already passed, so they wouldn't need this.
But it's just this narrow area. For me, I'm rather for this. I think it's a good progressive land use policy. I just see, while we may not have adequate street parking, the amount of private space parking we have in this part of town that is just empty, half empty. I can name four or five garages off the top of my head that is just a total waste of very valuable space, not only a monetary value, but whether it could be more incorporated into better land use in the area. My only reluctance is that we're just targeting such a narrow scope of an area. It's almost the equivalent of an underutilized parking discussion on an overlay district.
So I want to clarify this. The way this was drafted, it would be a citywide amendment.
That's different. And that's where I was going. That my reluctance is we're just doing this tightly defined area. If we're having a discussion on better ways to utilize parking, it should be citywide and comprehensive, not just this two-block area because of whatever reason.
Yeah, the discussion came about as a way to reduce, we're constantly getting amendments to reduce parking requirements for specific uses. And so the discussion came about as a way to reduce the need for that. So currently, you can locate parking off-site if it's a space that's fully available. So if, let's say, the the Baptist Hospital garage had 10 surplus spaces that weren't required based on the uses in that building, they could make those spaces available for some use off-site. However, that garage has the parking required by all of the uses. That being said, they're not being used at night. They're not being used at the time that Macchialina would be needing to use those spaces. And they could potentially make them available at night. But our current code allows you to use those spaces, but they cannot be considered required parking. They would not make up the required parking requirement for some use located off-site. So what this amendment would allow you to do is to use the shared parking ratio and allow that parking to be utilized for somebody off-site without having to reduce the parking requirement.
And if that happens, let's say that an operator lost its lease with this off-site location, mm-hmm. they would then have to replace those spots with something equivalent, right?
Correct. That's correct.
Wait, did I understand you right, Rogelio? You said this would allow garages that otherwise aren't considered required. Wait a minute. This would make those places like Baptist counted as required parking. That's what you said, right? Which would then reduce commissioners getting these proposals, hey, take away my parking requirement at my hotel. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Currently
we have two definitions in the code. We have surplus parking and underutilized parking. Surplus parking means it's not required parking and you can make that available for required parking off-site. Most garages don't have surplus parking, but they are heavily underutilized, such as the Baptist Hospital. It's not utilized at night. And so this would allow for some of that underutilized parking to be used for required parking for somebody who's located off-site.
And so what would they do? They would just have to make some lease agreement with the owner?
It would be a lease agreement or a covenant or something with the property owner, and it would have to be identified.
It makes sense, right?
Of use.
It makes sense. I guess one tricky thing, these sort of ifs can happen in any ordinance, but one tricky thing obviously is Baptist decides to change its business model, and you have the Macchialina, not to pick on them, but Macchialina is using their spaces at night as part of their required parking that has been approved, and Baptist changes business operations, that is no longer available. Now, Macchialina is already built. It's a new big structure. We approved it based on, them getting parking elsewhere. Now there's no parking available for them. And then,
that's why I just mentioned they'd have to go into some type of contractual arrangement that protects them from that.
Right. Taking it beyond.
Well, I understand you're
taking, but taking it beyond Macchialina, if a new building is being built that has a hotel, for example, they are able to provide 20 on-site parking spaces, but they're required to have 30. They get it from another space, from another building that has underutilized parking.
Right.
And then that other building, now, even though they have that contract, they close down or whatever, then you have a building that has not enough parking. So I guess that's one issue.
So our code requires that when parking spaces are not located on the same lot with the building or used as follows in section, what's a new section now? A unity of title, or for non-adjacent lots, either a unity of title or a covenant in lieu of unity of title for parking unification shall be required for the purposes of ensuring that the required parking is provided. Such unity of title or restrictive covenant shall be executed by the owners of the properties concerned, approved as to form by the city attorney, recorded in the public records of the county as a covenant running with the land, and shall be filed with the application for a building permit.
Which would make it a permanent covenant.
Correct.
Okay, well, that would alleviate that concern. Then the question is, would private owners of lots be willing to do that?
That's a whole other question.
Yeah, is this realistic?
Right.
I think valet companies would definitely take advantage of it.
It's whether if you owned a lot that had underutilized, would you be willing to commit to a indefinite covenant?
This town, people want money. They want extra income.
It can't hurt.
It can't hurt. But I have one question. Make sure this doesn't apply to any residential apartment buildings, right?
Yeah, the shared parking ratio does not include residential as part of that. So
even if a residential building built extra parking, this is not going to be included.
If a residential building built extra parking today, it's not required parking, they could potentially sell it to a...
Okay, but nobody does that because that takes away their FAR. Okay, I got it.
Correct. So our shared parking ratio gives no benefit for residential uses. It's only for different types of commercial
I just want to make sure we're not overlooking any unintended consequences.
It applies to office or banks, retails, hotels, restaurant, theater, nightclubs. It doesn't apply to other uses because they always have to provide 100%. And then,
I don't think there's any unintended. I think the question is, will it work?
People's insurance might go up, and they won't want that. That's a good point.
I don't think there's any downside to it.
I have a question because you mentioned it in here, the requirements of distance in Section 528.
Mm-hmm.
So not knowing that section off the top of my head, for instance, the new community health center that Mr. Galbott is proposing is anticipating patients coming to that health center to go park at the 5th and Alton Shops parking lot, which seems quite far away. Does that fall within the Section 528 distance requirement?
Yes. So that exists today. The thing about that use is I don't believe it has a parking requirement.
No, it doesn't.
So that's not affected by this.
So the community center was approved with or is in process of moving forward without any parking requirements.
It only had like 5 spaces or something like that, and part of the deal, I think, was that they wouldn't have to add spaces for their new location because they're basically mimicking, you know, doing a clone.
Replicating
what
they had before, right. More or less.
Okay. I think the plans show 5 spaces in the rear of the property adjacent to the alley. That's not going to be enough for the patients.
Okay. So what is, roughly speaking, what is the distance, allowable distance?
So that's on page 9 of your packet. You see it's section 130.36. Now it's section 5.28 in the resiliency code. So in a local historic district, it's 1,200 feet. Outside of a historic district, it's 500 feet. And then there's also a circumstance for properties in the south of 5th Street area. They allow 1,500 feet of the property. And then properties located north of Normandy Drive having a lot of area greater than 30,000 square feet, which are individually designated as a historic site. The parking is within a distance not to exceed 2,500 feet. I believe that's the International Inn.
Okay. Thank you. I missed that entirely. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, again, Rahelia, what is it that I know it's a discussion item. It's a question of whether we suggest to the commission that
to take it up.
And that's up to you. So this is something requested by the board. I'm following your direction on these suggestions, so.
There's one thing that disturbs me. I don't mind if a valet driver has to run 1,200 feet, but when we make it that there's no valet and the patron is expected to walk 1,200 feet, that's 3 blocks. They're not going to do it, so.
I would make it a good point, because I think that's part of what we talked about with Maculana, is that they are having valet, and so one of the requirements.
No, they're not having valet. Maculana got an ordinance passed that they have no required parking for.
They themselves have told us that they are having valet.
No, they specifically said they don't want to pay for valet. That's why they got the ordinance passed, so they don't have to pay for valet. I'm positive.
I thought they didn't want to pay the penalty for each space that they couldn't provide.
If you have valet, then you don't have to pay the parking in lieu. Is that correct?
You could still have valet parking, and if you don't comply with your parking requirements, still have to pay the fee in lieu.
But if you have park?
Because valet parking operators can use underutilized parking. So the garage at 5th and Alton has underutilized spaces that valet operators use. They take cars there, but that cannot be used for their required parking. That's for operational parking.
Oh, okay. I understand now. I'm sorry.
Because they were going to have like a tens of thousands of dollar penalty without the parking, and they said it's better to kind of apply that money to valet, which I think they're offering. So, but what I would add to this is if you're going to be a business who's taking advantage of this, you must provide valet service.
Okay.
So that
the patrons aren't going and looking for whatever bank or office building it is to park at.
So that would likely be best located in section 528, where it talks about locating parking off-site.
That's the whole thing. To me, it doesn't matter if it's like within, you know, 500 feet or 1,000 feet. If there's valet taking the cars somewhere nearby, the whole idea is to not have to build a whole big, ugly, invasive parking lot structure on Miami Beach when there's another parking lot or parking garage, you know, 1,000 feet away or 500 feet away that can be utilized instead. I mean, all the residents want less development. So I think this is a way of, you know, instead of having that, having a valet service that can go and park the cars there as part of the required parking. Does that make sense?
It does. The only thing I would just, not to push back, but just the 1,200 feet is only in the historic districts. It's not outside of historic district. It's 500. And our historic districts are very, you know, Walton Road, Collins, the density there is high, so I don't know that you always have the opportunity to provide a valet stand in front of each business that may want to utilize this. But that being said, in the historic districts, if you're on a historic property in a contributing structure, you have no parking requirement. So it's not really – it's not often utilized in the historic districts.
Well, I guess I'm not – I mean, I don't have an opinion on the specific – how many feet or the historic versus non-historic. So I guess it's my thinking is just sort of a big picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if any other board members.
No, I think I want to think about this more. I don't know if I want to vote yes.
Well,
remember, completely your prerogative, but you're only voting whether to have the commission address it.
What I was just going to say.
No, we're not.
Yeah, but once they get their hands on it, that's why I'd rather have something more that I'm confident in to really.
Well, they get their hands on it. They refer it to the land use board or to us, and as a full ordinance.
Right, they would draft an ordinance.
Comes back to us as written, and then we can look at it and assess it. But
right.
I'm coming back to the question of, is this something that businesses really want or need, and do we envision anybody actually taking advantage of this? Because I'd hate to kind of make everybody run circles if there's no point to this.
Well, I mean, I would think they would need it if there's. I mean, aren't there businesses that need parking that isn't currently available?
Correct. Yep. And we do have businesses that take advantage of our off street parking when there is surplus available.
Right. So I think they
this would
use
make
it
so that there's more surplus available.
Right. Right.
I think we should toss it into play.
I agree.
Because then what happens is that the commission will discuss it, and then it'll go get sent to land use and come back to us, and, you know, more
and
eyes.
And we'll vet it again.
Yeah, more eyes will be on it, and it'll have the opportunity for a public hearing where businesses and, you know, whatever can get involved, and we'll have more input so that by the time it comes back to us, we'll, you know, maybe have shaken out a couple of other.
And by the way, when we recommend the commission address something as a potential ordinance, does it even have to?
No, I mean, if one of them picks it up and sponsors
it. Okay. So can we collectively agree to we'll suggest that the commission address this and see what they do?
Yeah.
All right. Do we need a formal vote on that?
If you want to make LTC,
yes.
I would recommend a formal vote.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. So do we need a motion and a second?
Yes.
Okay. So Tanya moved it. Anyone want a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Mr. Cement.
So just to be clear, the motion is to recommend that the City Commission consider referring an ordinance to the Planning Board to recommend that the shared parking standards be modified so that they can be utilized for off-site parking pursuant to the existing requirements in Section 528 for off-site parking facilities.
Correct.
And so that will be transmitted to the commission in advance of next month's commission meeting? Or, I mean, obviously not tomorrow, right? So
right.
It's not as an agenda item, so it's an LTC. I'm going to try to draft it very quickly and send it to the clerk, and they get it to them pretty fast. So I don't know if they're going to read it before, because it's I think it's a heavy commission agenda.
Well, no, they definitely
not for tomorrow. Yeah,
not for tomorrow. Anytime after Thursday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Roll call.
Okay. Ms. Bott?
Yes.
Mr. Cement?
Yes.
Mr. Rim?
Yes.
Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Mr. Frieden?
Yes.
Mr. Magazine?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, last discussion item is uses in residential marinas.
Okay. So this is a discussion item requested by the board regarding the regulation of uses in residential marinas. And so what I provided in the memo in the staff report is our existing regulations regarding marinas.
Unfortunately, before you go on, can you just tell me, when you say residential marina, is that like the Sunset Harbor Marina?
Yes, it would be a marina that is behind a residential building is the way I would.
Do you know how many there are on the beach?
I do not have that number.
I don't think there's a lot. Sunset Harbor, is there another one?
Yeah, so the King Cole has one. There are buildings along West Ave that have them.
Marinas?
Eden Creek.
There are some, yeah.
Okay, great.
I mean,
okay.
It's not
yeah,
like,
there's some.
Not like 100 probably,
right.
But more than a handful.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess the concern was that there's activities happening in these marinas, renting boats, charters, other things. That could have a negative impact on residential quality of life was the gist of what I got from the request for the discussion item. I think we got the request 2 months ago.
Sorry to interrupt. One more question just so I'm fully educated. Residential marinas, are they typically owned by the residential complex?
I think it's actually both, Brian.
Both.
Just where we are on West Avenue is a great example. It's 650 West Avenue. Our building owns the marina behind. Yes. Bentley Bay, it's a private owner that actually owns the retail space. He also owns the marina. So I think
okay,
it's...
Okay, so you have private owners as well as the residential
yes.
building itself owns
yep.
it. Okay.
Because
I know I live in Sunset Harbor, and that's not owned by the residents.
I've seen some where the slips have an individual title for each slip.
Right.
Where they could be owned by a unit owner or they can sell...
Okay, but we're talking about marinas that are at a residential comp, whether they're privately owned or not. Okay.
They'll also have third-party management on some of them.
Yeah.
Meaning it's owned by someone different than the condo or whatever it might be, and they have a third-party managing
operator. Okay.
Space.
So I just included the regulations in the code today. We don't have a lot of restrictions on uses for residential marinas. We have restrictions on keeping marinas clean, keeping them well-maintained, not docking on public seawalls. We have limitations on how far out the marinas can go based on the width of the waterway, and we have requirements for if you need to exceed that for certain marinas, they need to get a conditional use. So we don't have a lot in terms of use restrictions on residential marinas, which is where the discussion of the board was going.
Right.
We do have one zoning district, the WD1 Waterway District. That is the properties on the west side of Collins Avenue in Mid Beach, where they basically Collins Avenue is adjacent to the Indian Creek Waterway. There's a little sliver of land there, very narrow properties. Those are in the WD1 District, Waterway 1 District. And that district does have some uses on the uses of those marina spaces. So they can be used for water transportation stops, for rental of watercraft, excluding jet skis and similar uses, wet dockage of pleasure craft, and walkways and decks. So we do have precedents for marinas being regulated in the zoning ordinance, but we don't have those regulations applicable to other districts. It's only in the WD1 district.
It's a good point you bring up as well, because I know there's some ferry ordinances being discussed at land use, at neighborhood committee, that will come to the full commission. And it's my understanding that both of those proposals will land in what would be classified as residential marinas, mm-hmm. Sunset right. Harbor and down by the Bentley Bay.
And mooring as well. But let me ask something, Aurelio. So these the sections that you've provided to us are for public marinas, right?
any marina.
Any marina, because I can tell you that
Some of the regulations are public, like more docking on public land, yes. But some of these, maintaining them, you know.
But I'm talking about, like, for instance, I know for a fact Sunset Harbor Marina does not allow any boats to drop or pick people up. So that must be their own private rule. So they can implement whatever private rules they want.
Correct.
But you're saying we don't. The city hasn't
really formalized that type of a regulation. Yeah.
So it's at their discretion what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So can I jump in? So I actually asked for this because over the last 6 months I've heard from people all over the city who live on waterfront. In waterfront buildings, that there is this sort of unintended void of governance for a business use that wasn't, I think it was just that it wasn't anticipated when these laws started off, right? So now all of a sudden you've got people who have jet ski rental operations or people who own 20 units in a condo and have bought two or three boat slips in the marina that's part of the condo and are running charters out of that aren't permitted. And so there are a couple of different issues. One is the BTR renewal process, and I don't know much about that, and I'm not sure that that's even within our purview, but it's sort of part of this larger discussion. But the end of the desired outcome is a residential quality of life issue, which is that if you have no overarching laws governing the sort of business use in a private residential building, then you can have whoever's flexing that day be, you know, because you might have a great condo association that says, you know, we're prospectively putting this into our condo docs and we're making sure this doesn't happen. Or you may have one that doesn't have very engaged owners and doesn't see the risk. And then you end up having people traipsing through the lobby in bathing suits to get to somebody's boat slip or coming back drunk. And, you know, I've heard stories of people having sex in the planters and trying to find a bathroom and using the planters as a bathroom or being starving when they get off the boat and looking, you know, patrolling around the amenities areas of the private building looking for someplace to get something to eat. I mean, all these unintended consequences because there's no laws about, you know, if it can happen at all, if it can, under what circumstances, who's regulating that, does there need to be some kind of security presence, what are the hours of operation, what amenities need to be provided by the business owner to service his or her clients, you know, does a bathroom have to be made available, like, you know, who takes care of the trash, do they take the trash and put it into the building's trash cans and then the building's paying for extra, you know, like all these things that just weren't contemplated, and so leaving it up to the discretion of each individual building seems to be optimistic at best. It can be easily manipulated. I mean, we're seeing it in the world of affordable housing where somebody comes in, dominates the board, and then bends it to its will and forces residents out. And this is, you know, kind of that sliding continuum where people can do the same thing to allow basically unregulated businesses to operate in your backyard, literally in your backyard. So that's the point of this conversation. And again, I don't think it's malicious. I just think it wasn't contemplated as a use when all this stuff happened, and you know, 40 years ago or whatever.
I think number one, I would love to champion this issue with you because we live 4101 Pine Tree Drive, Tower 41. Right across from there, you have a lot of, you know, these slips. I'm talking about midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., all night, you know, parties on these boats. You call code compliance, they come, they turn the music down, 5 minutes later it's back up. And they just don't really care about the regulations. You have the loading and the queuing for these cruises that takes place on Collins Avenue, which kind of creates a whole bunch of other traffic, and they just kind of operate like they're in the wild, wild west. So whatever we could do to kind of put some rules and regulations on these operators and these boat slips would be great.
Yeah, and I don't know who manages, if it's part of the BTR process, of how many people a boat. I mean, I remember sitting at the light at Collins and 41st waiting to take a right, watching, I mean, it must have been 30 people plus coolers and towels and stuff like that getting onto what looked like a very small boat for that number of people. And
they load from the street, so they're blocking traffic.
And it just looked like an unsafe, mm-hmm. you know, disaster waiting to happen.
And there are no parking requirements from what I believe. So a lot of these cars, they'll either load from Collins or they'll just pull up on the curb and block the sidewhack or
the whole thing is just like the world of unintended consequences, because none of these uses were contemplated when the stuff came about. So
Tanya, I am so glad you brought this up. I didn't know. I thought maybe I didn't know what this was about, so I'm not prepared. But I'm going to ask. I have friends on the Marine Committee to opine on this. I'm going to ask the two neighborhood associations, Brian's and my own neighborhood association, which is on the Bay, which have private marinas, to opine on this. And I'd like to come back with some solid suggestions.
Yeah, and I know, I just moved into the King Cole, so I don't have a ton of experience, but I know there's been an ongoing issue at the King Cole, so I can connect you with some of those folks as well. And I know Commissioners Fernandez and Minor have been both working on addressing some of these kinds of issues as they pertain to publicly owned marinas. Maybe we can take some of what they're already working on from that perspective and apply it to this. It just takes on an additional level, because if you've got people going in and out of your lobby it's a little bit of a different situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what you hear, Sunset Harbor runs a tight ship, and they're very strict, so I think they do a good job of self-policing. But to Tanya's point, you know, to have to trust everyone to do that is probably daunting. But so why don't we do this? Why don't we, since you weren't aware, and I know how hard you work at getting community interaction, that we push this to September. Let whoever wants to do some homework and then bring it back.
Okay.
Brian, would it be possible to share the Sunset Harbor governing documents with the board?
I don't know if they will, but I'll ask.
I mean, it just seems like that if they're doing a good job of it, maybe
they just have. They're very strict with all their rules. I live on the water and I'm on their dock, and so they have all types of rules about who can come, who can't,
if we have somebody who's already doing it well,
I'll see if they have a. I'll definitely look into
that. Starting point for discussion.
Okay.
So anyhow, that's what this was about.
Okay. Do we need to? It's a discussion item. So can we just agree to put this off till September?
Yes.
Okay.
And what about the BTR renewal thing? Is that something that would fall within this discussion, or does that need to be elevated to some other group of people?
I'll ask.
Okay.
I don't have a good answer for you.
Okay. Great.
BTRs.
Anything else? Okay, we have a really busy July, so enjoy your next few weeks.
Yeah, eat your Wheaties.
You do in July? So you'll settle.
For August.
That was.
It's a long agenda.
Yeah, but did they tip you off because you're the chair?
Yeah, they just told me we have a very busy agenda, so we want to start an hour earlier.
Very busy. That's a step off.
Okay.
It's a lot of items, right?
Very busy.
A lot of items. Apparently a lot of commissioners who are getting off the commission want their items to be heard so they have a chance to vote on it, and so they're pushing for us to do it all next month.
So eat your Wheaties.
Yeah, so just remember, 9 o'clock. What's the date?
July, I think it's 25th.
25th?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the private applications have been noticed for 10 a.m. Those cannot be heard before 10 a.m., but the ordinance is, the notice requirement's a little different, so we can notify, send a notice that the ordinances can be heard sooner.
And some of the... Not the full agenda, but some of the agenda will be up online within 2 weeks before our meeting. I think that's how you've been doing it.
The private applications are usually up over 30 days. The ordinances are about 2 weeks because those get referred, and they only have a 10-day notice requirement.
Okay.
Generally, some of them do have a longer notice requirement depending on what's in the ordinance.
Okay.
So those can pop up a little later because of the nature of the game.
Okay, thank you.
Don't worry.
And please take mangoes.
What are they doing?